But I should never think of spring.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to call the meeting together for the GLEADA Planning Commission. And if you would please all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Madam Clerk, if you could do the roll call for us, please.
Thank you. Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Fuller.
Present.
Commissioner Maynard.
Present.
Vice Chair Jenkins.
Here.
Chair Onan.
Here.
Thank you.
All right, so we are going to go into our public forum as the first item this evening. So the public forum is an opportunity for you to speak on any item within the jurisdiction of the city of Goleta that's not on tonight's agenda. So you folks that have filed specific slips, this is an isolated item. So Gary Vandeman, you're our one speaker in the public forum tonight. Please come up, we'll give you 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Onan, members of the Planning Commission, staff, neighbors. You probably noticed that the season of Lent is now upon us and that Easter is a month away, and the kids will be digging for Easter eggs. Well, the RVers have already found an Easter egg in the zoning code. How many Easter eggs are hidden in the zoning code? I don't think we should have to dig for the Easter eggs. I think we should know up front what significant changes have been tucked into the zoning code and not have to dig for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vandeman. All right, so we're going to get on to our agenda, our normal agenda. Are there any amendments or adjustments to the night?
No, there are not.
Agenda. All right, so we have some minutes from the previous two meetings to go through. As you recall, we deferred on the January 25th to make sure we had time to go through those. So we can take them together or separate to move to approve them, and then I'll go look for comments if there are any.
Mr. Chair, I would open discussion for minutes of January 25th and suggest that we do these separately.
Okay.
I do have, I believe, one amendment, and that is on page 12. third paragraph from the bottom, that section, rather than 1713020, it should read 1713010. And that's my only amendment. So I would move to approve as amended unless there's any other amendments.
So we are on the minutes for the planning meeting of January 25th. We have a motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. We had one amendment to those minutes. Any other discussion on those minutes? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Looks like it's unanimous on approval of the minutes for the 25th. Now we're looking at the minutes from February 8th. Comments or motions?
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of suggested amendments to these. Let's see, on page 5, fourth paragraph from the bottom, I think we should reference section 17.25.020C before Commissioner in that line. There was discussion that's not in the minutes here talking about bathing facilities and accessory structures, and I know that was brought up in our discussion and the minutes do not reflect that. So I don't know if staff would want to review the tape or whatever, because there was suggestion also about only one set of washer and dryer per residence, so not having one in an accessory structure and one in a primary residence. So that's also not reflected in the minutes. So I don't know how staff would want to proceed, if they would want to revise these and then come back to us with a set of revisions before we approve them, or how you'd like to proceed on that. I do have a couple other
Because I think that particular item, wasn't that under your discussion, Mr. Fuller?
No.
There were a few of us that contributed.
I recall reading that in the minutes, so are you sure it wasn't captured anywhere?
I may be wrong, but I looked.
If you may, I have to agree with Commissioner Jenkins.
You didn't think those were captured?
Well, the one thing I noticed that wasn't captured was he was specifically intending that there only be one set of washer-dryer facilities per residence, and that having an accessory structure with a washer-dryer facility in it could also allow for a separate washer-dryer facility, and, you know, that's leading to greater possibilities of use as a, you know, second dwelling unit.
In the same context, we talked about not having a shower, having only a half bath in that accessory structure. I know we had some differing opinion on that.
I like the shower.
Yeah. It should be around 1725.020, page 5, because I also made some comments about different comments, but on the same issue. So it should appear on that page, and I don't see it on that page.
Yeah.
So then how about we put any other comments? Otherwise, let's put these minutes back and bring them back for approval when we get that contained.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have a couple other suggestions as well. On page 8 at the top, under the discussion about defining pods and containers, there was also conversation about not wanting to prohibit vehicles from being parked on driveways. And the staff had mentioned, well, maybe we're talking about abandoned vehicles or something. So the minutes should reflect that conversation as well, I believe.
And on that point, I had also brought up the issue of if somebody was working on their car, that there should be some accommodations for that. So we should think about that as well.
I recall that, too. On page 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 paragraphs down, section 17.25170 should read 180C. And on page 11, second paragraph down, the actual section, rather than what's listed, should be 17.26.040.B2C. Page 12, second paragraph from the bottom, should at least reference section 17.30. And let's see, on page 13, if you give me just one moment here. I was awake the night of this hearing, and I was thinking about our conversation about the 40-inch high fence with the 14-inch clearance on the bottom. And I wonder if I can just impose on staff and the commission, just to ask clarification from staff on this. Is this talking about the project perimeter fence, or is this talking about private fences of units within a large development? Because just thinking, if you're going to have a 14-inch space between the ground and the bottom of the fence, you're going to have pets running amok in a project. So. Yeah,
Commissioner, that was Esha, I thought.
It is, correct. But okay. It's talking about projects with fences, and I'm just wondering if someone's private fence is considered different or handled differently than the project fence.
It is.
Okay.
That's two different things.
All right. Thank you. And those are the only ones I have.
Mr. Daniels, did you?
No, I was looking at staff, and I mean, that's correct, is it not? You've got Esha fences, and then you've got real fences around your home.
Right. So you wouldn't have your project fence in an Esha, because the Esha is protected and can't have the development within Esha. So any fencing that is allowed in Esha would have that wildlife clearance. And that is the intention, actually, is to let wildlife come and go, because that you're protecting the habitat. It's not your project.
Right.
If it's immediately adjacent to Esha, it's also usually required. For example,
There is the Cabrillo Business Park is up against a fish and game or fish and wildlife wetland. Mm-hmm. To build a fence there, that was required to have that wildlife transfer size in there.
I understand. It's just, you know, as the public is purchasing these homes, they should be aware that it'd be a problem with their, if they have a pet in their backyard, they're not going to be able to corral that pet.
All right, any more comments on the minutes from our last meeting? Mr. Fuller.
If I may, one other comment that won't do much to save the wildlife from the domestic animals either. So maybe it could be clearer that we're having this misunderstanding about the application of this type of fence. You know, maybe there's a way of making it a little more understandable for the populace going forward. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on my comment on page 11, 1727040. That isn't exactly what I meant. I guess the best way to put it would be that if you took the intent literally, it could produce houses with very very colorful schemes, mm-hmm. resembling flowers of nature, and still be harmonizing. So,
Chair, if you wouldn't mind, it would be helpful to get like specific,
sure.
or to just, as you did previously, direct us to go listen to the tape and then revise it. So, because they're minutes, so we're trying to, and we're also summarizing, so we're trying to, it's not a word for word. So if we didn't capture the essence, you can tell us how to better capture it, or we can go back and watch the tape and do a better job of
sure.
summarizing it. Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioner Maynard, did you have anything? Okay, so with those, we'll ask you to bring those minutes back to us at the next meeting. So we won't vote on an acceptance of those minutes. We'll look for those to be updated. Okay, so now we're into our workshop section. So, Madam Clerk, do you need to read that item for us into the record?
I will. Item B1 is a public workshop. It's on the review of the draft zoning ordinance. It's part 4, regulations applying to multiple districts.
All right, staff, Ms. Wells, to you.
Thank you, Chair and Commissioners. Good evening and welcome to the public that's here tonight in volume and I'm sure watching on television. It's great to see participation. We love that. And we have appreciated the public comment that we've received and we've provided to you. It's also in our public comment log. So you should be up to date with all the public comment that we have received. In our PowerPoint tonight, we'll be summarizing a little bit of some of that public comment along with each slide because we are discussing floodplain management, hazards, landscaping, lighting, non-conforming uses and structures, oil and gas, parking, and loading. And while that sounds like a lot, we have spent a lot of time going through the materials and talking about it and looking at public comment, and we think that it's a pretty reasonable amount. It's going to be hard work, but this is a workshop, and I wanted to emphasize that this is, and it's the fourth workshop that we've had after a year's worth of modules. We've also had many stakeholder meetings and other public meetings, so I think I want to make sure that to encourage people, if they're not already on GaletaZoning.com, to look at GaletaZoning.com and sign up for the email blasts. There's also a sign-in sheet over there that Andy Newkirk has, and you might want to sign up on that, and we can get you loaded up on our email system. So that's another way for you to be able to receive emails, is to go over to Andy and get that logged in. And by the way, if you didn't know, I know it's a little bit formal looking, but we're workshopping this. Andy is taking notes and typing notes as we speak, and then either after the meetings, even if it's late, and then the next day the staff meet and we go back over all of your comments so that we truly can try to understand and digest and start looking at different ways to address your comments so that when we are finished with the workshop phase, we can come back with you with a summary of what your comments were by section and how we think is the best course of action to address the comment or concern.
And then you will be seeing that when we go to hearings. So once we finish through these workshops, we'll go back hard to work with our consultant, our RM, and then we will return probably in the June timeframe for hearings. So we'll, or maybe late May, because we are making a lot of progress. We're not waiting. We're going back and then working up till the next meeting. So we're trying to stay up with the meeting so that we can quickly turn around and get to hearing while everything is fresh, not just in your mind, but also in the public's mind. So seems like a lot right now, but I think it will help later in the process. So let's see. On our website is a information about how to get a stakeholder meeting. It's important to be at these meetings, and it's important to write public comment. But I also wanted you to be aware, the public to be aware of the fact that, that the stakeholder meetings have been very helpful for us as staff, and I think also for the people coming in having stakeholder meetings. We just had one today. We have them every week. Usually it's groups of people, sometimes a single property owner, that don't really understand something in the regulations, and it in a way helps them write their comment letter or provide the comment to the Planning Commission, maybe better informed because they understand how the zoning ordinance works. So you can call 961-7548. That's on the website, and that's our zoning phone number. Helen Gannon is our intern, and she's scheduling everything for us. Or you can just email us, any of us, it'll somehow get its way over to Helen. And we will schedule meetings to meet with you about anything in the document, not just on something that's going to be workshopped later or already has been workshopped, because all of this material is going to come back again. So we encourage everybody to ask us questions. I also wanted to point out that we have open houses. We've had one. And we have stations of information with staff assigned to them. It was a really good workshop. We had really good comments and feedback. We have another one on Saturday. So this Saturday, February 27th, here at City Hall from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., we'll have it the same format that we had before with the stations with staff. So you can come in anytime, 9 to 4, and you can come in multiple times. You can stay all day. But it's for you to come and to better understand the different chapters and content of the zoning ordinance and, you know, ask any question one-on-one with staff. So that's Saturday. We'll have a third one in March. April 7th. And that's the evening one, 6 o'clock. Let's see. And at the open houses, we have Spanish translations. So Sylvia Uribe, she is here. So anybody that you know or is here that either isn't, you know, very comfortable speaking English when it comes to zoning especially and wants a Spanish interpreter, Sylvia will be here. So please let people know. We're letting people know. That we're trying to get feedback from everybody in our community. With that, I think we should just dive right into our slides because I think it's a good presentation to try to kind of get you in the groove of the information that you're considering tonight, and then we can turn it back to the chair for public comment. Martha Miller from RRM will provide.
Great. Thank you. So I'll just go quickly through a summary of the regulations you'll be considering tonight and then really try to reserve the most time for the discussion of the issues. But just before we get in to this, again, remind ourselves why we're here. When the city first incorporated, they adopted the elements of the county zoning code as the city zoning code and then subsequently went on to update and adopt a general plan. And as a result of that, the code is outdated and even has references still to the county and doesn't fully implement the general plan. So this is the effort by the city to do just that, comprehensively update the zoning code so that it's the city's own zoning code that reflects the general plan and that's easy to use, incorporates a lot of kind of interpretations or technical fixes that staff has used along the way, and overall provide clear rules and criteria for development that happens within the city. So we're in part four of six parts of the zoning ordinance, and this is the second time, or kind of the second portion of this. There'll be one more portion of part four that we'll discuss and then move on to part five and six. So these are the regulations that apply in multiple districts, so pretty much citywide. The first section is floodplain management, and this has standards and regulations for development within FEMA-designated areas of flood hazards, and it has specific standards for construction, things regarding anchoring, elevation, floodproofing. It has limitations on the storage of materials and equipment. Basically, you shouldn't store things that could float away in a flood or cause injury or public health problems. Some requirements for utilities really focused on minimizing or eliminating the potential for infiltration into floodways of things like waste and so on. There's limitations on encroachments into floodways, making sure that we're not increasing the danger of flooding or the effects of it. Limitations on diking, filling, or dredging, and this is really consistent with the Coastal Act. So this is another one of portions of your zoning code that would be part of your implementation plan should the city or when the city adopts a local coastal program. The next section is hazards, and this has standards and regulations that address coastal, geologic, and fire hazard areas. And kind of the first thing that's required is an initial site assessment, where coming in and looking at a project, if there's potential for hazards, is there a fault line there? Is there a risk of landslide? Is it in an area of high fire hazard area? And then depending on that initial site assessment, if there's findings that there is a hazard area, then special studies are required to address that specific hazard. There's standards in that address shoreline development, including how far you'd need to be set back from a bluff top, so that really overall it's to reduce or eliminate the need for shoreline protection. And in fact, in the coastal zone, it's very highly, shoreline protection structures are very highly regulated. And really the view of the Coastal Commission now is that there shouldn't be shoreline protection to protect any new development, and in fact, any development built after the adoption of the Coastal Act in the 70s. So those are also being discussed, and policies related to this, with Coastal Commission through this consultation for the local coastal program update, and we anticipate there being some input from coastal staff on these. So this is a little bit of a in progress section, I would say. Then there's standards for geologic slope and stability hazards, as well as fire safety. And again, the coastal hazard standards are being considered based on Coastal Commission review. The city also did recently complete a coastal hazards vulnerability study, and that as well is being kind of in consultation with the Coastal Commission staff. Next section is landscaping, and this details where the landscaping standards apply, what areas are required to be landscaped, including any required setbacks, lot perimeters, building perimeters, and unused areas. There are standards and requirements for the type of materials that are used, tree requirements, the size and spacing of planting materials. The Design Review Board, or DRB, did review this section and did have some comments on providing more flexibility, not being so rigid in the materials and size and spacing that's required. Some design principles incorporated for landscaping. The DRB also had some comments on this as far as, you know, this is really design language and shouldn't be in the zoning ordinance. Requirements for landscape plans, as well as alternative compliance, which allows for flexibility through case-by-case review with a discretionary permit. So basically, if somebody had some other ideas for landscaping that met the objectives of this section, through discretionary review, that could be considered and approved. The city did just recently adopt a water efficiency landscaping ordinance consistent with state law, and that will need to be incorporated in with this. Because it wasn't completed at the time, that's not all reflected in this. So that's something that the city has since adopted and would need to be incorporated. The next section is the outdoor, or is on lighting, and the what's included in the draft is really based off the city of Goleta's the outdoor lighting guidelines. And there's the purpose is really to have adequate visibility at the same time protecting against excess light and protecting the character, protecting the dark sky. It's applicable to all new development and exterior alterations that involve replacement lighting. There's some exceptions to that. But there's certain types of lighting are prohibited, searchlights, mercury vapor lights. There's some requirements for timing controls so that lights go off when they're not serving a purpose anymore or they're off during daylight hours. There's requirements for shielding. And then there's supplemental requirements for how things are designed. So the height of different fixtures, how much lighting there needs to be in pedestrian areas or parking lots, and so on. There's been a number of comments received on the lighting plans, and if I were to try and categorize overall, some of them are that what was carried forward from the outdoor lighting guidelines is not kind of the current best practices, that things have come, have developed further since these had been adopted, and Title 24, that just by state requirements are sometimes, I would say, more protective than the ones are in here. So one thing that your commission may have a comment on is that we go back and kind of update to make sure that, you know, we're looking at the best available and that where Title 24 is achieving objectives, we leave it to that because that is going to apply anyway. But there's also some maybe specific things that your commission could weigh in on, which would be helpful in that. Again, the DRB looked at this section, and they had some comments on the appropriate height of wall-mounted fixtures in pedestrian areas. Right now, where it's no more than 12 feet, there was, I believe, a comment that it should be limited to 8 feet. And I think some standards for maximum illumination. So those might be some things as well for your Planning Commission to consider. The next section is non-conforming uses and structures, and this really sets out the rules of how to deal with non-conforming uses and structures, which are things that are existing and were legally established but may not, but are not consistent with current regulations for whatever reason. They could have been built before, even before there was a requirement for permits, or there could be an existent with a setback that those setbacks have since changed. So, and this is very common in a built-out area or a primarily built-out area. So this explains how to deal with those situations. There's a couple of existing provisions that are carried forward, and these are specific to Goleta. The one is the limited exception for non-conforming industrial uses, and the other is the termination of non-conforming uses. So those are existing ones that are carried forward. The rest of the chapter has things on things for non-conforming structures that you can continue. You have a non-conforming structure that is legally established that can continue. You can maintain it. You can make non-structural repairs. You can make certain structural repairs, and there's the limits on that. You can add on to that non-conforming structure, but that addition needs to conform. So say you have an existing structure that maybe doesn't meet the front setback. Well, you could add on in the back as long as that's meeting all the setbacks. So that new addition needs to meet the new standards. There's additional allowances allowed through Planning Commission review for that. And then there's also provisions for restoration if something is damaged. And that's a pretty typical thing to address. So there's the standard allowances for reconstruction, and then there's additional allowances through Planning Commission review to bring that flexibility. There were some comments on that as far as that enlargements of nonconforming uses should be prohibited and restoration should adhere to the standards in effect at the time of replacement. So there's some maybe thoughts that what's in the draft isn't totally appropriate. The next section is for oil and gas facilities, and these are regulations for on and offshore oil and gas facilities. A conditional use permit is required for any type, and they're really actually limited to the zones that they would be allowed. There's a number of development standards that apply to all oil and gas facilities, and then standards specific to pipelines and standards specific to the abandonment and removal of the oil and gas facilities. Some of the comments received on this talked about the development standards and limiting the height from 45 feet with consideration for additional by the Planning Commission, lowering that down to 35 feet, and also increasing a setback from 500 feet from any residential use to 1,000 feet from any residential use. One thing that the Planning Commission may look at and as the development standards or those requirements for buffers if they increase, and I just the question of whether there's any land left that they would be allowed to go, and that leads the question of whether any new facilities maybe are appropriate. You know, where are those locations appropriate? At the same time, though, the development standards for pipelines, you know, there are facilities here, and so there may be a need in general for the transference of these gas or oil. So even with not allowing new oil and gas facilities, there may still be a need for pipeline standards and standards for the abandonment and removal. So something to think about with that way. Parking and loading. So this section has a number of standards for the number of parking spaces that are required with different uses, and then the design and location and development of those parking spaces. So it includes parking ratios, and they're specific, which are the number of parking spaces you need to provide per square foot or number of units. There are specific ratios for mixed-use development intended to reflect the idea of that nature of the development where there's a variety of uses in one area. There's a set of allowable parking reductions for things such as transportation demand management programs, if you're close to transit, if there's shared parking, if you're in Old Town District, which is really the idea behind that is developing this as a cohesive mixed-use walkable area. And as well, Old Town, the parcels in Old Town District have a lot of, there's a lot to work with in trying to develop these properties, and parking, providing parking on site is often a difficult thing, particularly in infill development. So it's trying to balance meeting parking needs, but at the same time allowing for use and reuse of properties. Standards on for parking location. Typically, parking is required to be on site, but there are some allowances to allow off-site parking within a certain distance and under an agreement. Bicycle parking standards, loading standards, and then parking area design and development standards. This is the section that addresses RV parking, which, as you know, there's been a lot of comments on, and you'll hear from a lot of people in the audience today. Just to give a little bit of background of kind of where that came from or why it was included in this. There are a lot of jurisdictions that do regulate RV parking, and how they do and what they require varies from any jurisdiction. And so there's very restrictive to very permissive. And so there's no right kind of answer. It's really what is right for your individual city. Going through the module process, one of the reasons that was brought up for regulating or having them be located outside of the front setbacks was that these can be the size and the bulk, and in some cases, you know, are, if they're parked for a long time, feel as permanent as accessory structures. And so if we don't allow accessory structures in that front setback, why should we allow the RV? So that's just a little bit of kind of the discussion that happened through that process when this came forward. The other parking concerns that have been raised was that there shouldn't be so many parking reduction allowances, that there's a real parking problem in Goleta, and that everybody should be required to provide their fair share on site, as well as the need for additional additional requirements for pedestrian walkways through parking lots. So that concludes my presentation, unless
Chair and Commission, I have one thing to add. I forgot to mention that we had another meeting with the Design Review Board, and so Jennifer Kerman met with them and talked about lighting and some other things. So I just want to point out she's continuing to meet with Design Review Board to include them in the process, and she may want to add to that.
Well, they have reviewed, as part of your review tonight, the DRB's looked at landscaping and lighting, and their comments are included in your packet as their minutes. So you have their input on those sections tonight. I know they have asked to re-look at lighting, so I do suspect that they'll look at that again, and we'll bring those comments to you the next time that section comes up.
Anything else with staff? Okay. All right, so I'm getting organized here. We're going to have a lot of people speaking this evening. And just so that you understand, what I'm going to do, I have a few people who are not speaking on the specific parking issue related to RVs, which I seem to have about 30 speakers.
Wow.
So we're going to go through the first group of speakers that are to other topics. Then we're going to come back and we're going to have all the speakers come up that want to come up on the RV issue. And then we're going to take up that parking loading issue as the first issue when we get into the commission workshop portion of it. So you have the opportunity to stay and listen to the other issues that are going on with the commission and with staff and perhaps responding to your comments. So our general folks, I'm going to call you up, and I'm going to call then the person behind them so that we're using our time as efficiently as we can. And we're going to allow 3 minutes on that. So Donna Trout, you're first, and Dr. Ingeborg Cox, you're second. Dana Trout, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm mainly on the RV, so would you please put me in RV?
Okay. One down. Dr. Ingeborg Cox and I can't read this one.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
May I just suggest, being that we are a big crowd tonight and there can sometimes be varying viewpoints, that we just be polite to each other and that we'll keep the booing and the applause to a minimum, if we wouldn't mind. Thank you.
Could you read that?
Maruha Klenese.
Okay, so Maruha Klenese, you will follow Dr. Ingeborg Cox. Go ahead, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are some changes needed in Chapter 17.37. If the presence of non-conforming uses in the city of Goleta impact the public health and safety of its residents. If a parcel is marked as legal non-conforming use and it's sold, it should change its use to the use that it was zoned for. Allowing a parcel to continue to be non-conforming indefinitely sends the wrong message. Any changes to non-conforming industrial uses, like minor enlargements, extensions, expansions, or structural alterations, should not be allowed unless there is a CUP. Limited exception determinations should not be the process. All documentations that would verify what the applicant states could be requested by the zoning administrator, but the Planning Commission has to discuss it in an open forum. Also, and the distribution of materials, the zoning administrator should distribute the material to appropriate city and county departments before the Planning Commission reviews it. And the public needs to be notified. Please add these to the distribution of materials. If an existing oil and gas well does any type of new exploration, like fracking or slant drilling into unexplored areas, this should be defined as new production. Not as stated under point 6A, that it would be an exception to the limited exception determination. The Planning Commission has to do the ruling. If a facility has been non-conforming for a total of 10 years, the use should be terminated. A termination order of a non-conforming use should not be modified. It will create confusion and sends the wrong message that non-conforming uses can continue ad infinitum. A legal non-conforming building or structure that is damaged should not be able to be restored unless the restoring is to make it to a safe, conforming use. Also, non-conforming structures should not be able to be enlarged or extended. Any alteration should be approved by the Design Review Board and the Planning Commission, not the zoning administrator. Modifications and expansions of an existing oil and gas facility should go through the entire permitting process. Required setbacks for oil and gas pipelines from ESHAs have not been mentioned, and they should be at least 100 feet. They need to be added to the required setback in page 112. A conditional use permit with EIR should be demanded if an existing facility wants to modify or expand their premises. Under grading and drainage, on page 111, ESHAs like Bell Canyon Creek need to be mentioned, and the setbacks required by the Coastal Commission need to be please put in writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Maruja Clenese, followed by Cecilia Brown.
Hello. My name is Maruja Clenese. I'm with Suzanne Elledge, Planning and Permitting Services. We're incorporating all of our comments for part four in general, so we'll be submitting that in writing to the city. But for purposes of tonight, we have some general comments. Since the landscaping requirements noted in section 17.35.050 are quite definitive, we appreciate the opportunity to provide an alternative compliance plan. It's important to allow for flexibility to develop a reasonable landscape plan based on the merits of each site or project. So we wanted to thank DRB for catching that. By nature of this new zoning code being adopted, some non-conforming structures, uses, et cetera, may be created. And I wanted to acknowledge Ms. Miller's, you know, brief discussion about that in your presentation. I would love to see that language just exactly as is in that section, because we felt it was that clarity was kind of missing. So maybe considering looking at that a little closer. Has there been an analysis of potential non-conforming situations that may be created? And if any have been identified, have the property or business owners been contacted or notified of this potential situation? For example, parking requirements for a retail business right now is currently one space per 500 square feet. The new zoning code proposes one per 350 square feet. So increasing the parking demand in this case for retail. So if that business owner were to come in for a modest improvement, they would recognize that they're in non-conformance with parking. And if they can't meet it, then they're in a way stuck and not able to do what they want to do because they're now in this nonconforming situations. So has staff considered how this may impact a business owner if they wanted to do improvements to their establishment and they realize they don't and perhaps they cannot conform to the parking regulations? In section 17.37030D, which is under nonconforming uses, expansion of nonconforming uses, allowing them to be approved with a CUP, or conditional use permit. 5C, under that section, talks about the required findings to be made in order to allow the CUP for the nonconforming use. And it says, the proposed expansion or substitution would not be inconsistent with the general plan or local coastal plant program. It was one of the required findings that it would have to be consistent with the general plan. But we're implementing the new zoning code to be consistent with the general plan. So if there's a nonconforming use, then it's going to be nonconforming with the general plan. So there seems to, that needs to be looked at, I think, a little bit closer, because there seems to be some inconsistency there. Section 17.37.040.C, under limited exceptions for nonconforming industrial uses, there is a benefit assessment clause. Maybe consider adding job creation and job retention as one of the benefits to be assessed. And then my last comment, 17.37.050, termination of nonconforming uses by City Council. Please consider what may trigger the termination of nonconforming use and perhaps include those findings in this section, because usually those findings are noted in other ordinances and other jurisdictions as to the criteria that City Council needs to meet to make that determination. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Cecilia Brown, followed by Barbara Remick.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. I'd like to speak about your proposed lighting ordinance. I was the co-author of the lighting guidelines written 10 years ago, which are now out of date and not in compliance with current requirements, which are the Building Energy Efficiency Standards, Title 24, Chapter 6 of the California Building Code that Ms. Miller referenced, which contain non-residential outdoor lighting requirements. When applicants come before the city with a lighting plan, they are required to, in order to get their project approved and certified, to meet the requirements of Title 24. They don't meet the standards that are in your proposed ordinance because they're out of date, they're irrelevant, they're in the dark. So you need to update this ordinance to reflect those standards in Title 24. For example, there's where it talks about the foot candle for parking lots as being at 5. Well, that's totally irrelevant today. There are other completely different standards. And in speaking to a lighting engineer who's worked on projects in the city, he said, you're not going to be able to enforce this ordinance because the standards are, they're irrelevant. We're meeting some other different standards which come from Title 24. Also, your general plan is out of date because while dark sky concept is still important and relevant, there are other what are called bug, back light, up light, sky globe, glare ratings for outdoor luminaries, which are in place. So there's got to be a wholesale shifting and rethinking of this ordinance and rewriting it. I would be happy to participate in that effort, having written the one 10 years ago, because I think it would be nice to be able to be in, you have to be in conformance with Title 24, period. So I pass that to you as something that you need to pass to staff, if you would. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Remick, followed by Faramina Murray.
My comments are regarding RV parking. Are we moving on to that now?
Not yet. So we'll put you back until the next one then?
Sounds good.
All right. Faramina Murray. And Michael Iza after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. I also would like to speak on the lighting, and I echo everything that Cecilia Brown said, and also in addition to say that there is this thing called ecological consequences of artificial night lighting, It's about where the light is so much, and so we are disturbing the health of amphibians, mammals, people. There's been studies about a lot of lighting can cause health issues, and much, much more also in compliance with Title 24. I think we have a great opportunity to learn some of these good things, to make our lighting not only for safety for people, but also to enhance the other species and animals and plants in our community. I would be so also very happy to participate in that workshop and getting the ordinance to comply and also to be probably Goleta leading the lighting ordinance in how we treat other species, especially mammals, amphibians. Apparently, a lot of lighting near the creek can really disturb the reproductive process of butterflies, of salamanders, of frogs. Anyway, we'll send you all those information. The other thing I want to say is about the landscaping. Now, Goleta has a sense of urban landscape, and I think all the comments from the VRB are good, but I think any ordinance should be able to protect all the existing specimen trees, character of different areas like the parks, old town, uptown. These things, when you do development, you'll just have to do all those considerations of our urban forest. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Michael Issa?
Hi, Commissioners. My name is Michael Issa, and I'm a property owner and a resident here in Northwest Goleta. I have some general comments about the process of that we're going through with this draft zoning ordinance, but let me start by stating that there are many inconsistencies and errors in the draft zoning code with different zones. These inconsistencies must be flushed out before the draft zoning ordinance becomes adopted. I understand that environmental review is still pending, but now is the time to do that. Let me go into some specifics with the issues of the timing and the public process. For example, modules 1 and 3 went through the Planning Commission in 7 meetings and 7 open houses on the dates from March to October of 2014. During this time, it was reported from staff to the Planning Commission that the staff was putting together an apples-to-oranges comparison of the existing and proposed ordinance. While long, the comparison took over a year to complete. With that said, although the department may have been short-staffed at the time, the reintroduction of the zoning ordinance shouldn't be rushed through now. The timeline to introduce the draft zoning ordinance should not be compressed into a 3-month period for public review. The current schedule is for all Planning Commission and public workshops to be completed between January and April 2016. This only leaves 3 months for public input. In my opinion, the schedule undermines the public process and public input and opinion. There were numerous changes between the modules and the draft, and the public needs adequate time to review and comment. With that said, let me just outline some specific suggestions for you to consider. First is the city should consider holding a separate review process meeting where there is adequate time for public input that can assist in the final version of the draft zoning ordinance and acknowledging all these details that need to be reviewed. I have a couple other suggestions, but I'm out of time.
No, you're not. You've got 53 seconds.
I'm sorry.
Go for it.
It's a yellow light. I apologize. The other suggestion is the city should have an informal kiosk. Let's say, for example, Camino Real, Old Town, Calle Real, things of common public places to collect public feedback and draft zoning ordinance. Other cities do this, and they have great success doing that. With that, I'll end.
Thank you. Okay, so that is all our speakers on topics other than our most popular topic, which is RV parking. Yes.
If you don't have time to make all of your comments today at the kiosk, please do also email us. I have been reading all of the emails that have been coming in. They're incredibly helpful. We do take note of every comment. Michael, I know you said it sounded like you were starting to run out of time there. Please do send all of those suggestions. We love getting those, and it helps us because outside of this meeting where we're a little bit time limited, we can spend more time really reviewing the detail of your comments. So please do submit those that way as well.
Okay. So now here's a game plan. We have a lot of speakers, and each one of you is entitled to time to tell us what your thoughts are. But what we're going to do to try and get through it as quickly as we can is we're going to limit everyone to 2 minutes. If you're into a deep subject, at the chair's discretion, I will extend that period. If you are just going to say ditto, from the person in front of you or some, you're welcome to do that as well. So you don't have to necessarily take the time to acknowledge where your position is on the subject, because I think that's what everybody's doing for us this evening, is representing where they are on this subject, so that we as commissioners and the staff clearly understand what the issue is and where the general consensus is. So again, as I go through this process, I'm going to read the first person up and the person right behind them. That's to make it be as efficient as we can. So when you get that second name, please stand up and get in position for your turn. So we're going to lead off with Barbara Remick and Jeff Waco will be next.
Hello, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Barbara Remick, and I was born and raised and educated in Santa Barbara. I moved to Goleta in 2003 so I could be closer to my elderly mother. I'm finally living a longtime dream of being a professional artist. I hold a degree in art from UCSB and come from a family of artists. My father was an art teacher in Santa Barbara and Goleta, left San Marcos High after many years there in public schools, and my mother enjoyed success as a plein air oil painter. In fact, 14 of her paintings are on the walls of the new Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara. We're very proud of her. I recently left my teaching career of nearly 30 years to follow my dream of being a successful jewelry artist. So far, things are going well, and I'm able to make a living selling my handmade jewelry. In part, this success is due to my owning a travel trailer, which I bought in 2013, brand new, with the intent to use it for travel to art shows, and now it parks in my driveway. I travel to shows all over California to sell my work once or twice a month, and most venues allow for overnight parking. The cost of overnight parking at most shows is about 20% of what it would cost me to get a hotel room. My boyfriend also goes with me to many shows with me, and we bring our beloved dogs as well. If I did not have the trailer, we'd have to pay for dog boarding or dog sitting on top of those costs and expensive show fees. Having my trailer at my home is not just convenient, it also keeps us safer and off the road late at night after an exhausting weekend of selling. This Friday, we're headed to Del Mar to a show, and we'll be returning late Sunday night. Can you imagine, after a busy weekend of selling art, packing up your booth, driving for 4 or more hours to a storage lot to leave the trailer, which may be as far as Lompoc, and then continue home? We'd be home in the wee hours of the morning. Not a very safe scenario for us or other drivers. And I spent nearly an hour today driving through my neighborhood, Stowe Canyon to the north, Calle Real to the south, Valdez to the east, and La Patera to the west. Do I have to quit?
If you could finish up real quickly.
Okay, I will. I counted 51 violations in that neighborhood of proposed ordinance, and about 30 of them were large RVs that would not fit alongside the houses. My small 18-foot trailer is 2 feet wider than the space on the side of my house. Assuming that most of these other RVs would have to leave the property, where would they go? There are waiting lists for expensive storage in our area. I would probably have to sell my trailer rather than pay for storage. And there goes my dream of supporting myself as a jewelry artist. So just to wrap it up, let's keep the good land a great place to live. Let us have our RVs.
All right, so Jeff Waco, you're up next, and Dana Trout after that. And just a reminder, folks, we're going to have to contain the exuberance so that we can go through it. We appreciate your support here, but let's hold the clapping and or other sounds.
My name is Jeff Waco. My wife and I have been Goleta residents for 38 years. And to start with, I want to tell everybody that I'm not just speaking for myself and my wife, but for our kids, our grandkids, and generations to come. I think the commission needs to take that into consideration. Most of us that live here in Goleta moved here because it's open. Our lifestyle is different than Santa Barbara, different than many other communities. And to add things that other communities have done, especially planned communities, where they plan for these things, we don't have that opportunity. And if we take away our right to park things like boats and trailers and tent camping things in RVs on our own property, we're going to deprive generations to come of the opportunity to camp and fish and jet ski and have all the fun opportunities that we all had. And it's not right. So I started by saying life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are rights that you and all of us Goletans need to fight for. And we all need to remember that the loss of freedom begins in small neighborhoods and small towns like ours, and it moves to county and state governments, and it usually starts with a handful of pushy and mouthy and complaining people who have an agenda. And it gets added to your list of things to consider when maybe it ought not be considered. And then you folks pass laws that take away our freedoms, one by one. I think in many ways our city government here in Goleta has gotten too big, and it's time that we remind our city council that they cannot control every aspect of our lives. And I hear in here like the plant choices, the fertilizer, you know, just everything. It's crazy, okay? Anyway, the very few people who have raised this issue to get it on this agenda don't speak for the rest of us, and you folks represent hundreds if not thousands of us. So I find it interesting that my neighbors can grow pot farms in their backyards, okay, and I can't park my RV in my front driveway, okay? I'll wrap it up. This is not the America I remember. This is not the Goleta I moved to 38 years ago. We count on our recreation, our RV for recreation and as our escape vehicle should a fire or earthquake cause us to leave our home. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Dana Trout, followed by Pam Timsham.
Mr. Chair and Commissioners, we and many others settled in what became the city of Goleta precisely for these reasons. One, it's a working class community. We were attracted by enough regulation for safety, but otherwise was pretty free form. It was the antithesis of a gated community with a homeowner association. The fact that we live in an area that has a great beach, we live out by the Elwood Bluffs, and good weather equates to people having boats, going camping, bicycles, skateboards, backyard parties with bounce houses, mariachi bands, and barbecues. Doesn't fit with the gated community or homeowners association. It's also not a high-income area. So the concept of having rental space for RVs, boats, camp trailers is both not available locally and also is expensive and beyond the means of most of us. Many people equip their camp trailers, as we do, for emergency preparedness, just like the ones the city has stationed near Costco and other places. If the city can do it, why can't we? So, to summarize, we moved here in 1968, and we like many of the things that are happening in Goleta, but this is not one of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Pam, and will you say your last name?
Finsham.
Finsham.
Yes.
And followed by Michael Liu. Go ahead, Pam.
And I'm ditto to the guy before and the guy after. Okay. My husband and I live on San Giano, and we own our home, and we've lived there about 34 plus years. We've been planning our home improvements and someday to own a motorhome. Well, it took us a while but we finally purchased a motorhome. And we pay taxes on our property. We've been doing it for many years, and we should be able to park our motorhome. We made a driveway special for the motorhome, so it's not blocking any drive. It's not blocking any driveway. It's not blocking any sidewalks. And we feel that we should be able to park our motorhome on our driveway. It's a brand new motorhome. It's not demolished or anything like that. We're going to cover it and put the tire covers on it, and it should be fine. We feel that Goleta is overcrowded right now, and the housing has, instead of a single-family home, it has 8 to 16 to 20 people, and you've got cars parked all over the place. And we have trashy vehicles parked in the park on the public streets, and we can't complain about that, but you're complaining about our motorhome. So we feel that since we pay taxes, and we should be able to park our motorhome on our property. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Liu, and followed by Scott Clark. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. My name is Michael Liu. I'm a 40-plus-year resident of Goleta. I'm here to speak about the proposed restriction on RV encroachment in the front setback. I'm going to apologize in advance for basically reading this to you, but it's absolutely the only prayer I have to meet your hopefully 3-minute time limit. There are probably about 300 RVs currently parked in residential property in Goleta. Each represents a significant personal investment. Others probably nearly all overlap the front setback in some fashion, some because it's convenient for access and maneuvering, others probably most because the layout of the vast majority of properties in Goleta makes it practically impossible to do otherwise. So if we can't park there, where do we go? Not on the streets. We outlawed that a few years ago. Not to a local storage lot, because there simply are no open available spaces, and that won't change in the foreseeable future. Possibly to some storage lot 30 or 40 miles away, that creates a whole new set of problems. It would be unreasonable for our city to effectively be saying, if you want an RV, you have to park it 30 miles outside our jurisdiction. It would be unreasonable for owners to incur the time, expense, and inconvenience of driving back and forth of 4 segments totaling 100 miles or more just to retrieve and then repark an RV every time they want to use it. Plus, there's the necessity of getting the permit from Goleta each time in order to park it on the street for any period of time. There's also a negative impact on disaster preparedness. We've all been told that when, not if, a disaster strikes, this area will be cut off from the world, much of our infrastructure may be inoperable, and we need to be prepared to go on our own at least for a few days. My wife and I are elderly. Our travel trailer is our disaster preparedness plan. It represents shelter, heat, power, lighting, 40 gallons of drinking water, cooking facilities, and sanitary facilities, any or all of which may otherwise be unavailable to us. If it's 30 miles away or otherwise inaccessible when the disaster hits, it's not a workable plan. On the flip side, this restriction provides no benefit of measurable consequential value. There's no direct safety issue related to vehicles being in the front setback. We do it all the time with our passenger vehicles and trucks in their driveways. It appears to be someone's subjective idea of possibly desirable aesthetics defined and bounded by an arbitrary invisible line crossing all of our properties. Zoning regulations should reflect the specific and unique needs and circumstances of our community. This one doesn't. This would be the wrong restriction in the wrong place at the wrong time. Unless and until there is a demonstrated availability of sufficient additional reasonably priced local storage for 300 or more RVs, plus all the other potentially interested local users, the setback restriction on RV parking should not be given serious consideration as part of our zoning laws. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Scott Clark, followed by Lisi Christensen.
Hello, my name is Scott Clark. I have a big concern with the proposed RV parking ordinance as it's written. We've had an RV parked on our property of one type or another for the last 16 years. As with most homes in Goleta, our lot's not big enough to keep our RV out of the front setback. RV is in good shape. It's used often. It's either getting loaded up for a trip or getting unloaded after a trip. Anytime in between, it's my hobby to maintain and tinker with the various components. It has up-to-date registration and insurance. It's also part of our emergency preparedness plan and a place for our pets in an emergency. I don't know if anybody knows this, but according to FEMA rules, pets are not allowed in emergency shelters. One of our dogs needs special care and medications. According to the FEMA website, 47% of the people that did not evacuate during Hurricane Katrina stayed in least in part because they did not want to leave their pets behind. This is completely unacceptable for me and a good reason for pet owners to all have RVs. There are other cities that have worked with RVs owners' needs. The city of Paso Robles states if your driveway is deep enough for your RV to fit without hanging over the sidewalk, you may park in your driveway. Fullerton is very similar to the same thing. There's a city, San Ramon, a suburb of San Francisco, that updated their zoning in 2006 and allowed all existing RV owners to be grandfathered in prior to the ordinance. I think the homeowner association type regulations that appear to be associated with all the new housing projects anyway should stay with all the new projects. Please don't try to impose them on our 50 and 60 year old tract homes. I urge the Planning Commission and the City Council to accommodate the hundreds of RVs. Thank you for your attention to this important matter. I also have a petition with 310 people that have signed it with probably half as many comments that I'll leave with the clerk on my way to sit down.
Thank you. All right. E.C. Christensen, followed by David Joffron.
Hi, thank you. My name is Lisa Christensen, and my significant other and I have been homeowners in Goleta for the last 25 years. We are now retired and have adopted our two grandchildren out of foster care for many reasons, but the strongest reason is we bought our home in Goleta was because we didn't want to live under the Santa Barbara rules and regulations that were imposed. Before we bought our 2015 motorhome, we researched the zoning on parking it on our private property and found that there was none. Our RV is parked on the front setback area, which, whatever that means, it doesn't create a safety hazard or any condition that would dramatically impact the public interest or welfare. We have incurred many working hours and expenses to create a parking pad to store our RV on those times that we don't take it out on recreational trips. It's costly and inconvenient to store it elsewhere. Why are RV owners being targeted? I feel that we're being discriminated against because we own one. The board members need to stop trying to overregulate a non-issue. This proposal ordinance would mean that most RV owners would be in violation. RVs should be treated just like any other motor vehicle. City officials need to spend several weeks auditing the whereabouts of Goleta RVs and what problems do or don't affect these. Are they blocking vision, jolting out of the driveway, a fire hazard, in disrepair, or untagged? We pay our property taxes. The town shouldn't tell us where or how we should store our recreational vehicles. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, David Joffron, is that correct? Followed by Dennis Kirby will be the next speaker.
Good evening. I'll summarize through this thing because most of what was said is there. Most of the configuration of the homes that I've seen in my neighborhood and around, it's impossible to get an RV of any size behind the front setback. It just physically is impossible. I purchased my house in 79. In 1980, I bought my first RV. I have had an RV on my side yard on a concrete pad with screen fencing since 1980, 36 years. To make this change in zoning is in effect a taking of the efficient use of my property, and therefore will lose value plus the other problems I got to consider. RVs, boat trailers, vans, cars, are all licensed by the state of California. They're authorized all to be on the same roads. There's no safety issue with respect to putting them there. So the only other thing it could be then for doing this is aesthetics. And the U.S. Supreme Court has already settled that matter. And I've given the site to the group, and I'll give you the site on that, that it is illegal to do that. Think of the working family. They want to go away for a weekend with the kids. Their RV, because of this proposed rule, is parked now in Oxnard. They got 100 miles to drive each way. That's 200 miles that they have to drive before they even start loading up the things to get the kids out to the beach or wherever they're going camping. It's an impossible situation. Well,
sir, we'll ask you to wrap up.
I'll just hand you the rest of this, and you can go through it then because of time.
Thank
Not
you very
much.
Much. Dennis Kirby, you are up next, followed by John Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, my name is Dennis Kirby. I've been a homeowner in Goleta for 45 years with my wife, Lynn. And every one of those years, I could have had an RV, boat, travel trailer, whatever, in my driveway. That's a right I've had for all those years and should continue to have. Please don't try to fix something that's not broken. I echo all the comments that everybody else has said tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So John Nelson, and followed by Kevin Duffy.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to add anything to all this.
Okay, we'll move on.
I've already been editing as I've been sitting there. I don't know who proposed this idea or why, but I can't imagine that the minimal inconvenience one would endure from seeing an RV parked in someone's driveway would somehow outweigh the inconvenience of my wife and I selling our home and relocating outside the range of our grandchildren. I do, however, own a small box truck. I don't have an RV. A remnant from a recently closed business for which I've been ticketed twice for parking in front of my own house. I went online and tried to find the ordinance number indicated on the citation, but was unsuccessful. So I have been unable to determine my options. The only place left for me to park is my driveway. It seems I'm being backed into a corner. Is that what our legal system is supposed to do? At what point and how often does serving the public become tormenting the public? That's just me. If this ordinance is passed, how many other people will be inconvenienced emotionally, financially, and otherwise, so a handful of RV-phobic people don't have to look at RVs parked in a neighboring driveway? Is there another concern? Overnight camping, alternative living quarters, RVs as rentals? I think that whatever the real concern is needs to be addressed independently without throwing hundreds of Goleta residents' lives into turmoil. Every law, every ordinance, every act enacted means some part of our freedom has been compromised. They should be scrutinized thoroughly and put forth only when absolutely necessary. After all, the creator of the universe only felt the need to give us 10 laws. Everything else are amendments. Please strike this one.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Kevin Duffy, followed by Dick Thurston.
Good afternoon, Planning Commission. I'm here to pretty much repeat what everybody else in this room has said about this ordinance that you're proposing. When you guys give me a tax break on that square footage in my driveway, then you can tell me what I can do with it. Until then, please leave my property alone and stop trying to impose whatever your sense of aesthetics is in a Goleta neighborhood. I've owned this house for 15 years, and I intend to live in it a lot longer than that. And I hope I hope I can live without the Planning Commission continuing to harass how I choose to live on my private property. Thank you.
All right, Dick Thurston, followed by Paul McFarlane.
Chair Onan, Dick, Mr. Thurston had to leave, and he said that he agrees with comments that have been made.
Thank you. Paul McFarlane, followed by Gerald Dahlke.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I repeat a lot of the same ideas that the other people have. And the issue of what the real problem is and why this was even put on, I think Ms. Miller said that the parking of RVs was a auxiliary building type of thing. Are we worried about people living in them on the property? Is that really what the problem is? And, you know, I mean, who knows if people are camping in. I don't personally own an RV. My neighbors do. I think they do a great job of keeping the RVs in, you know, on their property. They're clean. They're neat. The other question is, I've had problems with the enforcement people at the city. And the problem is that I talked to the guy extensively, whoever the enforcement officer is. And the problem is that we have a system of anonymous complaints. And if you've got a complaint, you can report this anonymously. What happened to talking to your neighbor? I mean, if you got a problem, what happened to talking to your neighbor? And he did reveal to me, without revealing who the person is in my neighborhood, that there is somebody that does walk around the neighborhood blocks and blocks from their house and reports things anonymously. They know who it is, but they can't do anything about it. And so that's, you know, to me, that's kind of, you know, chicken. I mean, why? Well, it's a bully. He's manipulating the city to get what he wants. So I think one of the things that needs to be addressed in that department, I don't think this is actually the place, is that there should be no anonymous reporting of problems. You should have to own up to your report. If you've got a problem with somebody, you should report it, and you should own up to that, and you should also talk to your neighbors. I mean, that's, to me, that's one of the big things. I don't have a problem with RV parking. You know, it's a lifestyle, and that's why we live in Goleta, not in Santa Barbara. Thank you.
All right, so Gerald Dahlke, are you on the way up? And Craig Buzzle? All right, you're next.
Gerald Dahlke. I find it a little paradoxical that we just said the Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice to all.
Thank you. All right, folks, so we've still got another 10-plus speaker slips here, so if I can ask you to hold the applause. Craig, you'll be followed by Becky Hunter. Okay.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Craig Bazell. I've been a resident. I bought my house in 1977. I live on San Carpino. I got to tell you, when this ordinance came to my attention, I was stunned. I've never had anything like that from the city in the years that I've lived here. Here's some demographics on my block. 26 homes. 7 of those homes have some combination of 9 RVs, boats, trailers. And I don't know how typical that is, but then I counted the number of people in those houses, 23 people out of those 7 houses. Then if I go over the next street, which I've not done, or a couple streets away, I'm suddenly looking at 100 people impacted by this ordinance. And if you put all of Goleta in there, you could be impacting thousands of people. And, of course, some of the things that got to me is there's no alternative parking. And it just didn't make sense to me that city staff and council really intended to impact so many Goleta residents with zoning measures that sort of instantly criminalize RV, boat, and trailer owners. I don't know where that came from. So just to summarize, as a retiree, I couldn't afford monthly parking at the current rates, even if such parking was available. And for the city of Goleta to decide, years and years after I put my RV into service, that parking on my property or on the front setback is no longer allowable, just doesn't make sense for myself and for our community here. Thank you.
Thank you. Becky Hunter, followed by William Tingle.
Commissioners, my name is Becky Hunter. I've been a lifetime resident of Goleta. And first, I agree with everyone that has already spoken about this subject, but I also want to applaud the people who put the RV street parking regulations in effect. It cleaned all the riffraff out of our neighborhoods, and we really appreciate it. My home is not an association, therefore it is not community property and should not be regulated as thus. I paid $500,000 for my home, and I pay property taxes and registration for my RV. It's not yours to regulate. until the city of Goleta annexes our driveways and garages. They have no business imposing new regulations on us. The regulations suggested are far-reaching. This is the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and all the people here say no to overregulation by the government, specifically with regard to our new, these new regulations on our own property. This is my family's only affordable travel option. I have four children. We also use our RV as an emergency kit. Please err on the side of flexibility. Do not be so rigid. And one last point is there is a regulation about fencing around an RV, and the regulation states that the fence is maybe 6 or 8 feet. I forget what it says, but that's much, much lower than the RV, so it accomplishes absolutely nothing. Thank you.
All right. So William Tingle, followed by Benjamin Ellsworth.
Commissioners, I'm a real estate broker and have been for 43 years. And someone mentioned about a lot of jurisdictions regulate parking, and that's true. But in Goleta, most of the homes that were built in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s are built on large enough lots where you can park an RV, and that's why we have them. Today, most all of the construction that's going on residential is such high density, you couldn't put an RV there. We live in our homes that were built in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s, so we can park an RV. The aesthetic value, it does not bring any values down. Values have declined, however. 2008, they went down 25%. Had nothing to do with my RV sitting in my lot. And everybody knows that. The setback requirements of 20 feet, I believe it is, and if you have a side yard, you got to have a 6-foot fence to cover your RV. Can you imagine driving down the streets in Goleta and all you see is 6-foot fence, 6-foot fence, 6-foot fence? It's ridiculous, totally ridiculous. Restrictions are necessary, but to restrict homeowners in the city of Goleta where they can no longer own an RV without parking it 100 miles away is a violation of our rights. Yes. Thank you.
All right, Benjamin Ellsworth, and followed by Fred Petrucci.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I appreciate the complexity and the value of zoning ordinances. I'm concerned about the parking because it's not compatible with most of our homes in the way they're laid out. If the layout of our lots allowed for the ability to park in the backyard, perhaps this would be a different discussion, but many of us do not have that ability. I'm also concerned about staff's representation. This is about auxiliary structures. When it applies to boats, it applies to ATV trailers, motorcycle trailers, it applies to any recreational vehicle or anything used for recreation. So I think if there is a particular problem, again, it was mentioned by other people, and I like to echo many of those thoughts, that should be addressed directly, and that we should really look at the format of our community when we look at these zoning laws and look at how our houses are constructed, how the lots are laid out, and what's really possible for your constituents to absorb and to work with as you address these. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Fred Petrucci, and followed by John Beatty.
Good evening. My name's Fred Petrucci, and I bought my house on Coronado in the year 2000. I grew up in Santa Barbara, and we looked at houses in Santa Barbara, and I wasn't happy with how Santa Barbara is changing all the layers of regulation, and I came out, we looked at our house, I walked the neighborhoods. What did I see? I saw boats. I saw travel trailers. I saw recreational vehicles. I said, this is a middle-class neighborhood, not a hoity-toity wannabe, you know, nose in the air, you can't do this, you can't do that. There's nothing wrong with parking your RV if it'll fit in your driveway, if it's not disabled, it's not derelict, if it's licensed to go on the road and you use it, there is no problem with it. And I think if you impose this regulation, it's going to create a great hardship for families. And it's already been mentioned, it's an emergency shelter, it's a convenience, it's a lot of things. And don't take that right away from us as property owners. Goleta is rapidly developing with a lot of high-density housing. Put your regulations for parking and all that on those neighborhoods, not the old established ones. Thank you.
All right, John Beatty, we have up, followed by Glenn Tkachi.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Listening Beatty. To me, Commissioner. It seems to me that you have a problem with consistency between each individual article from your general plan now to proposed planning, even for parking. If you look in parking, number one, for single family, there's no parking is allowed in the front setback. That means you couldn't park two cars in your driveway longitudinally without violating that parking rule. And then further on, now we get into RV parking, which is a problem because they always go in the setback. But I'm sure you can give a ticket to the guy who has the RV, but not for the second guy parking in his own driveway, because you get to pick and choose what you want to enforce. And that shouldn't be the way laws are made. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Glenn Tkachi, followed by Francis Arnault.
Hi, I'm in total agreement with everybody's already said. I own a boat, and I've tried to find alternative space or off-street parking for my boat in the Goleta area, and there's nothing available. And the closest I could find would be Santa Barbara, and that's really inconvenient. I use my boat at least once or twice a week, and it would just be really inconvenient for me to have to go all back and forth between here and Santa Barbara. I think convenience-wise and money-wise, it's just not plausible. So anyway, thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. Francis Arnault, followed by Carol Newman.
Good evening. Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Francis Arnault. My family and I have lived in Goleta for 37 years, and off again, on again, including now, I've owned an RV and parked it in my driveway. And I think that these regulations are a solution in search of a problem, which we don't have. And if you put in regulations like this, I'll be like everyone else. I'll have to abandon my recreational vehicle. It's just doesn't fit. I live on a cul-de-sac. There are 10 homes there. Only two of them have the ability to park on the side. Mine doesn't. Absolutely impossible. So I think these regulations should just put a big black line across them and throw them out. Thank you very much.
Carol Newman, followed by Laura Donner.
Thank you so much for having this public forum. I was reading through the zoning code, and it's good to have a zoning code for new buildings, but our homes that we all own here, we have worked hard for, and I don't believe that we need a code for them, you know, particularly what we can park in our driveways. There was even a code about basketball hoops and everything. Please put that on the new homes, but our homes, we don't need that. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Donner, and followed by Donna Harris.
Thank you. My name is Laura Donner, and I want to echo a lot of what's been said already. My husband and I had our home in Santa Barbara and had to rent a space in Oxnard for our travel trailer in 2004. It was $70 a month. So on top of an hour to go back and forth to get set up for a trip, we had that fee. Luckily, we were able to find a home in Goleta in 2005, and part of our criteria was really looking for something where we could store our travel trailer, and we were able to find that. As other people have mentioned, our camping trailer was a place where we were able to prepare during the Gap Fire as a way of, if we needed to evacuate, we were very close to the area. As I reviewed the proposed RV parking rules, I really was left to wonder why the rules were proposed. My husband and I walk through our neighborhood at least twice daily, walking our dog, and I see RVs and boats parked in driveways in the homes that have them, and they don't block the sidewalks, they don't block public access. In fact, I see that they're carefully stored. I don't see a benefit to asking for a 6-foot fence, as many of the RVs are much larger than 6 feet. If there's a problem with a particular homeowner or RV, I imagine a nuisance clause of some sort would allow for problems to be able to be addressed as they arise, rather than changing the rules to make them more restrictive for everyone, which will unfairly impact the many citizens of Goleta who are not creating a nuisance with their RVs. Thank you for your time.
So Donna Harris, followed by Wes Herman. Don't have Donna. Wes Herman.
Good evening, Commissioners and Chairman. Thank you very much for taking time to hear us tonight, and thank you for the very difficult work you do to keep our community clean and safe. My name is Wes Herman. I first took up residence in Goleta in Old Town in 1965 when I was attending UCSB. I've raised my children here, own 2 homes here. I'm out in the Santa Barbara Shores tract. When I first read this, I wondered where it came from and what the impetus for it was. A community being planned brand new, it makes a lot of sense. To impose it on a community that exists is so inconvenient and, I think, unjustified. I served as a firefighter in the Goleta Valley for 25 years, and I was never impeded in getting out patients or putting out fires or addressing emergencies by RVs where they were parked in the properties in Goleta. So I just don't see where this is justified for the older neighborhoods that most of us represent and lived in. I don't mean to issue this as a threat, but I have many, many friends. We've discussed this. We've joined as a group. And if this part goes forward, 17-39-070, we will be hiring an attorney to represent us. Once again, I thank you for the difficult work you do, and I don't not mean that to be a threat, but I do want you to know there will be added expense if you pass this. Thank you for your time very much.
Thank you. All right, so that was all of our speakers for tonight. Sir, if you didn't fill out a slip. Well, we can't really support reckless driving here. But all right, if you could give us your name, sir.
City Council, my name is Dale Creek. I'm a native Santa Barbaran, born in Cottage Hospital. I've lived in Goleta for the last damn close to 30 years, actually over that now. I raised my son here. We incorporated his learning with our RV. We have a boat, we've had Sea-Doos, we currently have a 24-foot RV that fits quite nicely, blocks no view. It's a very clean, very nice-looking RV. We specifically bought in Goleta because Goleta's the good land. It's a middle-class neighborhood that invites families. We've used our RV, like I say, to educate. We also use our RV, as has been brought up before, is for emergency preparedness, not just for ourselves, but for the older folks. My mother-in-law lives in Goleta and has a circle of friends that when the power goes out, the Northridge earthquake was a perfect example. We ended up making food for everybody, bringing coffee, and we supplied a service to the neighborhood through that RV. If my RV is parked in Paso Robles or parked in who knows where, because we don't have the resources in Goleta to accommodate the RVs. If that was the case, I had mine parked at Dixon's for a while. So I hope you guys really seriously look at what this does to us. It's a major inconvenience in money and time, and we bought our places because of the good land that we live in. So I appreciate what the city council does, and I really hope you guys take a second look at this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, just for the record, Don Bonick submitted an email, asked to have that read into the record, but it will become part of the public record via keeping this as a comment, so I won't read that at this time. All right, so is it the commission's pleasure to keep working, or do you need a break? I don't see anybody asking for a break, so we're going to go to work. And we are going to move right to the section now on parking and loading. And we'll take that up as our first module here tonight. So,
Chairman?
Yes.
Can we just take up the section on RV and, then resume the normal course?
That is where it will be. It will be in the parking section.
Yes, it will. But then just the RV section for these people, and then we can start.
Just for your information, that starts at 1739070, number 3, and that is on page IV-134.
Thank you. So now you want me to short circuit this even further, Mr. Fuller. Yeah. Well, let me take a look and see if we can do that. Boy. Well, it happens to come up right away. So it does come up, location of required parking. You said we're starting on 134? Oh, you're talking RV uses. Or the parking and loading starts on what page?
IV-134.
That's the RV section. The entire chapter starts on
page 123.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I was not intending to skip to the section. I don't know if that will create us any other consternation. Should we skip something that's stated before? What do we think? Okay. We're following Mr. Fuller here. We're going to go to page to item 17.39070 on IV-134. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Okay. So, as has been our custom, we'll go through commissioners and look for any comments that you want to make on this page 134. Commissioner Jenkins, are you ready to go?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Chair, I am. I do notice a typo. On A2, we have in the middle of the sentence there, it says they serve or in at an, and I think that's a little confusing language.
Okay.
Regarding the concern for RV parking, most of the speakers have stolen my thunder, but it's best that the thunder come from them. I did a lot of online searching in various other communities today. On this issue, and so I appreciate staff you mentioning that, and I looked at it. It is all over the board. There is liberal interpretation, there's very restrictive interpretation of it. I agree with the notion that we are not a Mission Viejo, and we are a unique situation. So I agree wholeheartedly with the concept that we're infringing on private property rights. And I'm an aesthetic guy, I'm an architect. And so I usually, aesthetics is important to me, but property rights, in my opinion, really trump that in this situation. So that's my thought on that. I do have another comment a little bit further in the section, which we can save for later or go now.
Why don't you hold right there?
Okay.
Any other comments on this page that we're talking about now? Go ahead. Commissioner Maynard, you're up.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the number of people that are here tonight. It is a great joy to see this many people here. I know you're not all here under happy circumstances, but I am very ecstatic to see you giving feedback in the civic engagement. That really means a lot to me. I also appreciate the number of folks that submitted comments that really helped me to prepare for tonight. In everything that I heard tonight, I heard about the importance of the RV parking for entrepreneurs, for healthy lifestyles and education for your families, for emergency plans, which is incredibly important in an area that is prone to fire. I learned something new about emergency situations for pets, so thank you for that tonight. I learned a lot about our existing community. I heard about being able to find 51 different situations of this in a single hour drive. This is definitely an issue that's relevant for many of our community. I heard about the independent spirit of our community and the importance of having some independence on your own property. I heard about the number of houses that are just not designed to be able to meet these existing requirements. And I really appreciate the fact that the RV community works so closely with the city to allow for moving RVs off of the street and into driveways. So I feel like a large compromise has already been made, and I want to make sure that it is possible for RVs to park in parking lots. I heard a call for consistency between cars and RVs, which I think is a really good point for the number of cars that are also parked in setbacks. I heard about the hardship from working families and low-income people, from the existing investment already put in, the lack of storage locally. I thought a very good point was made about a 6-foot fence not covering the RVs. So does that really make a difference? And I heard about the multiple decades that folks have been living with their RVs, and that's a long history there. I did want to note that I think there was a couple of comments about whether this should only affect existing houses or new. If for something that seems like it's had so much value for so many people in the community, I wouldn't want to impact this on new properties either. So I think that RVs should be allowed to be parked in the parking spaces in front of in the driveways. I think that they should be out of the sidewalk, which many of the owners tonight said that they do not park their RVs in the sidewalk. So I think that as long as it's outside of that. I heard that it's important to maybe have RVs licensed and registered, but also allowing for time for RVs to be for people to work on their vehicles as well. So not making those restrictions so prohibitive. So I support the idea of being able to park an RV in your front driveway.
Commissioner Fuller.
I just want to point out that in the first section, A1, it mentions that vehicles will not be parked in the front setback. And I don't know if any of you have had the experience where your neighbor drove their car onto their lawn and used that as a regular parking space, but I've seen it, and I'm a native here. So that's part of the idea, is to keep that from happening. That being said, I think that we should remove the part in here that says that it will not be within the front yard setback. I think that it should be confined to paved parking areas as opposed to any other place where somebody might decide to stick it because they can, because they don't have any more room to park anything. But I think that change might help everybody here. I really don't believe that we should make such a big alteration in our community, as this has been the way that it's been for so long, and we just don't need to upset it that much and respect people's use as they've been enjoying it.
Thank you. Commissioner Daniels, did you have anything to add to this discussion?
I'll go after Commissioner Jenkins, please.
I've already given Commissioner Jenkins a turn.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I've got a couple of questions that deal with the reading specifically. The recreational vehicle cannot exceed 15 feet by 36 feet in length. Where did you get that?
Okay, we
staff.
Won't. They're not going to respond. So you're concerned with the size constraints?
I am. Yes.
Okay.
And also, you talk about a 6-foot fence, but you don't give me what type of fence you want. And as a couple of the folks said, 6 foot is not going to help anything. It covers the wheels, but not much more.
Anything else, Mr. Daniels?
I'd like to. I keep saying have staff, but you know, I just want to. I want to know. I think I know, but I would like. I would like it to be in here somehow. I understand that the, you know, everybody, almost everybody who talked had some kind of vehicle, some kind of recreational vehicle. And if you have it now, shouldn't that be a nonconforming, legal nonconforming? And we're just talking about people who have got new units that that you have these types of requirements for. So, if that could be something that gets clarified, that would be good as well.
Is that it?
Okay, yes, thank you.
Mr. Jenkins, I see you want to come back.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. If Commissioner Daniels is suggesting a grandfathering, I would respectfully disagree with that in that, you know, there's been a lot of comment tonight about people shopping for homes in order to be able to place a recreational vehicle in a non-planned community. And so, without the homeowners association. So in essence, this ordinance is attempting to create a homeowners association for the entire Goleta Valley. So I would respectfully disagree that we grandfather because it's going to create a haves and have nots resentment. I did have a question that I would like the staff to look into too, particularly the gentleman who was a former fireman mentioned about not encountering any problems with RVs parked in side yards and what have you. I was curious specifically if we have an RV parked in a side yard and it's blocking an egress window from a bedroom. To me, that could be a real issue. That could be a life, health, safety issue. By allowing us to park in the front yard setback, then we're not blocking a side yard window, which is there for emergency egress from that bedroom in case the home is on fire. So just would love staff to look into that a little bit further, too.
Okay, I'm going to join the group with the consensus that this language needs to be changed. What the exact change in the language is, whether it's legal from a cursory view of legal nonconforming, grandfathering, or to changing the entire language so that we're not in conflict with this basic premise in our community, but I'm going to join it. So we've got all five of us here on the commission saying we need to change something here.
Thank you, Chair and Commission and public. We have a lot of other wording that we can work with. There's a lot of templates and that things that I think can work with this information and instruction that you're giving us.
Now, before we go on or go back, because I'm assuming we might lose some of our audience, was there anything that staff wanted to specifically respond to that was said here in public testimony? Or can that wait for our notes and minutes after these meetings?
We have a lot of comments that we're fortunate to have from the community to go through in regards to this. We've gotten hundreds of emails and letters, and we're going to use that information to generate some options for the commission to consider in the future as far as language. And there's also other cities that we can also look at as well.
Okay. So with that, I don't know that I can call on people with hands up, but I'll give it a shot. Go ahead, sir.
I was just going to
Well, why don't I pitch it back to staff real quick? I think they gave us an overview on this a little earlier. But Ms. Wells, if you can just tell them how the process moves forward.
Well, actually, let me just state for tonight.
Director Carmen.
It's almost 8 o'clock. And so the commission's going to go back to the beginning of this section, the review section, and start. More than likely, they will not get back to the parking section tonight, unless you want to stay really late. It's up to you. So more than likely, we will continue it to the next meeting. And they'll start on the parking section again. But the next step after this initial review will be a public hearing on the document. And that will be an opportunity for anyone to come and comment on anything in the ordinance. And then the commission makes a recommendation to the city council. They don't approve the ordinance. The city council does, if they choose to. So then that would be, goes planning commission recommendation, city council consideration, and either approval or denial. So those are the next steps. And we'll continue to notice everyone. If you've signed up with Mr. Newkirk, you will get an email notice of when these meetings are. GaletaZoning.com also has all the scheduled dates, and they're also available on the front page of our website when meetings are coming up.
Chairon, if I can add to that and be clear about our staff reports, when we prepare our staff reports for the next meeting, we summarize some of the key points that were discussed that you've asked us to do research on, and we've noted and that's on our list is to do more research on alternative wording. And so as we do with all of our staff reports, we include that wrap up, and then this one will have some more information for the March 14th meeting. Am I right? March 14th is the next zoning meeting that we have calendared. So look for that staff report. I think it will be an opportunity for you to see not just a summary of what was discussed, but also that some options that will be presenting in the staff report for future consideration. So it won't be that we'll be rediscussing the item, but at least you can see how we heard you, so that if you do have additional comment letters, you can kind of get a sense for, you know, where what we're headed, and maybe provide some comments on what we're thinking about as alternatives.
Yes.
I promise to make it short. Can we make sure that one of the recommendations or alternatives that we can consider is not having restrictions on RV parking? So I know we've talked about alternative language.
Okay, great. So your comments will not be lost, and you've come forward at exactly the perfect time. This is the first time through on this document. So we will use those as we move forward. And we're going to take a quick 5-minute break here and allow everybody to. You're welcome to stay with us for the rest of the evening.
I know I speak for everybody here when I say that thank you for showing us that democracy is still alive.
All right, let's take 5 minutes.
Don't please my folks too much. Don't laugh.
So I think we're starting on floodplain management.
Check if, Chair?
Yes.
Check and see if the person who does the video is around.
Yeah, he's in there.
Is he?
Yeah, I just talked.
Okay.
Okay, well, he went for a... Yeah.
You think you might not be in the
break,
room?
We're going to... A restroom break.
Okay, we're good.
Good. Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay. So we're on floodplain management, and it's IV 70. Are we all on the right page?
Yes.
We're all ready to start?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, you get first round on 70.
Under the applicability section 1732.020 on page 70, I was curious if this would also include sea level rise zones as determined by our most recent sea level rise plan rather than just the FEMA zones.
Okay. Mr. Fuller?
No.
Mr. Jenkins?
I have nothing on 70, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Daniel, page 70?
Negative.
All right, let's go to 71. You can look at that one right away. Anything on?
No.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On the top of the page, I had suggested we eliminate begins within any area. Seems like begins is not fitting within that sentence. And on B3, where it says adequate drainage paths are required around structures on slopes guide floodwaters, I think we want to add something between slopes and guide to say on slopes to guide or so as to guide or in order to guide.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard?
Okay, I'm going to cheat slightly and make one more comment on 70, but I have no comments on 71.
Okay.
Which is also in the general plan, safety element 6.2 has some language about the city may require applications of new or expanded development areas with known persistent local urban flooding, and there's some additional language about that, which also you lose an opportunity to talk about those other urban flooding situations when you focus just on FEMA. So I'd like to know when those might be coming back up. So I'd also like to look at safety element 6.2 in the general plan in relation to applicability there. And I have no comments on 71.
All right, so you can go ahead and take 72 right away, see if you have any comments there.
Oh, you'll love this. I have no comments on 72.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comments.
Commissioner Jenkins?
No, nothing important.
All right, Commissioner Daniels, page 72.
Nothing.
All right. How about you for 73 right away?
Nothing.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under B3, I just think that whole paragraph needs to be reworded for clarity. It's just really, I read it multiple times, and I just think it's needs a rework.
So this is on page 73.
Page 73, item 17.32080B3.
Language?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Fuller?
So no problem with the 25%. I have no problem.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard?
Yes. So in the last meeting, we talked a little bit about conservation element 7.4 when we were talking about ESHAs and the beach elements. And I believe that that's coming back up in this section here. So I wanted to make sure that that got addressed. So in 1732.080B1, I would recommend adding some language: any such permitted uses shall not degrade the quality of the habitat or cause impacts to birds and other wildlife, which is pulling from conservation element 7.4. And in general, as we're looking at additional expansions in beach and shoreline areas, that type of language should come up again. So I've got that a few times in this section, so later I'll just note it quickly rather than rereading that. The other comment I had is in B3, where it talks in wetland areas only, creating some provisions for new and expanded boating facilities. I'm not sure if that's necessary in our areas. So I don't know if that was, if this is state law or we can further restrict new development in wetlands.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Fuller, were you already on 73?
Yeah.
Okay, so Commissioner Maynard, why don't I bounce back to you and look at 74?
And no comments on 74.
Commissioner Fuller?
No comments.
Commissioner Jenkins?
None.
Commissioner Daniels?
Yes, one. Chair?
Sure.
C2B, at the end of B, fresh water for fresh water. What does that mean? That's the question. So You might have to answer it later.
All right. Yeah. Anything on page 75, Commissioner Daniels? The short page?
Negative.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
Nope.
Fuller?
Good.
Maynard?
Good on 75.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, we're back to you. You get to lean off this section.
Okay.
17.33, hazards.
Wonderful. So this is similar. In the hazards section, I believe a lot of the conservation element on beaches moved to this section. So in the first where it says purpose, I think it should say This chapter provides standards for proposed development and new land uses in coastal, geological, and fire hazard areas to protect the insert ecosystem, public health, safety, and welfare. If we're going to move the beach protection language to here, then I think we should have some recognition of ecosystems, environmental protection, and the purpose. In 1733-030A, I think we might, you mentioned some of the sea level rise protections, and I'm wondering if we want to refer to the new documents we've been developing on our sea level rise plan. So that just might be a good reference to include there.
All right, Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
All right, so I just have a question here. The Alquist Priolo earthquake hazard zone, are we actually in that zone? And looking that up, I'm not sure why.
I don't believe any maps have ever been produced.
I didn't see the correlation. And then environmental hazards, where the initial site assessment, so I'm in B, 1733030B reveals the proposed development is located within a bluff top or near shoreline. So would this include even something, whether it's called development or not, but it was something like we had a conflict with this in the past. Golf courses, greens built on bluff tops, would this be encumbered by this hazards report requiring for some kind of structure like that? All right, Mr. Jenkins, you're on 76. You got anything?
Nothing on 76, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Daniels, 76?
Nothing, Mr. Chair.
How about 77?
Negative.
Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under 1733040C and C1, I'm just curious. I understand. I'm just concerned that the city might be opening up a legal challenge. In C, it talk in the middle of the paragraph. It talks about shoreline protection structures will be permitted to protect existing structures a little bit further on. And then in C1, I believe it's prohibiting them. A deed by way of deed restrictions for proposed structures. So I'm just, it's again a have and have not situation. I'm just curious if, from a legal standpoint, is that a problem? So.
All right, Mr. Fuller, do you have anything here?
And is this dictated by the Coastal Commission? As far as, you know, these things? Yes, it is. That's what I thought. No, it's not? So this is our choice as a community. Is it in the general plan this way? Okay. All right.
There is a lot of language in the Coastal Act that deals with seawalls. And so there's some flexibility in some areas and not in others, I guess. And we can clarify that as we move through the process.
Okay.
Sorry.
Commissioner Maynard, you're on that. On page 77?
Yes. So under 1733040C, I'd like analysis of all feasible alternatives to coastal armoring to be laid out. This is from safety element 3.7 of the general plan, which is page 516 if you're looking at the general plan. But there it really encourages that if you are going to be doing any type of seawall or revetment, that you would have first analysis of all feasible alternatives to armoring. So I'd like that from SE 3.7 included. Also, as we're talking about where we do have seawalls, I'd also like that all that anything proposed are compatible with preservation of the quality of the natural resources there as well. And that's all my comments for this page.
Right.
Oh, actually, sorry, one other one. Under 1733040A, under purpose, it talks about the necessary to preserve significant coastal features, but I think it should also be to preserve the coastal ecosystems as well.
All right. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you look at page 78, see if you have anything there.
Sure. So just one in the same line. So this is at the top of the page under 1733040C3, structures on the beach. And again, some language about any such use shall not degrade the quality of the habitat or impact wildlife should be added there.
Commissioner Fuller, anything on 78?
Yeah, that's that same one. It's not that clear to me. Accept a facility necessary for public health and safety, including lifeguard towers, recreation facilities. So non-permanent structures will be permitted. No permanent structures will be permitted. So any of these public structures cannot be permanent. I mean, cannot be permanent, right? Is that what it's saying? Or that anybody can put up one of these types of structures as long as they're not permanent?
What it's saying is you can't put a permanent structure up.
Right.
Except something for public health and safety, so a lifeguard tower or something for recreational use, such as volleyball courts.
You can put up a
permanent. Right. So the recreational facilities and the volleyball courts, I mean, I would think it might be like a colon after public health and safety, you know, so that like all this, and then there's a list of things that are examples of public, you know, type facilities, because that's all, just clarification.
Anything else on that page?
I don't think so.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yeah, I was just curious about the sea level rise in E1 under the geotechnical report. Do we have a definition in the ordinance that helps the public know about that? And then, similar to Commissioner Maynard, do we have an actual document that we can reference to?
Commissioner Daniels, you have anything on page 78?
No, but 79, yes.
Go ahead with 79.
Application requirements, E1G. It talks about historical, current, and foreseeable cliff erosion, and it lists out tax assessment records, and I'm wondering why those are. I used to get into those a lot for a lot of different reasons, but never for a photo. And I did use the mapping facility over there at UCSB though, and that was helpful. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on 79, Commissioner Daniels?
Negative.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under item F at the top, it's talking about cliff geometry and site topography, extending the surveying work beyond the site as needed. And I'm just curious, to what extent beyond the site? I mean, how far is considered feasible? And should there be a limit? I mean, do we do a survey all the way up to the source of a creek? You know, I mean, it just seems like we should put some type of quantifiable distance. And then at the bottom, under construction plan number 2, the last sentence says and states that no machinery will be allowed in the intertidal zone. And I'm just curious if we shouldn't consider adding language that would say unless determined necessary by the Army Corps of Engineers or other presiding agency.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, do you have anything on page 79?
I'm good.
Commissioner Maynard, page 79.
I think a wonderful point was made about F and including some scoping there, so I thought that was good. And other than that, would you like me to move on to 80?
Go ahead.
Okay. There's several mentions of sea level rise throughout this chapter, and particularly as we're thinking about F here, I'm wondering if we should refer, would the sea level rise be based on the City of Goleta's reports? Because there are a variety of assumptions that might be able to be made on sea level rise, so it might be good to clarify that the sea level rise should be based on what the city has established as the sea level rise. Under F2A1, I'm also thinking that balconies and porches should be better described here in terms of the setbacks. The piece that I'm thinking about is I spent a long time living in Isla Vista, and that was the most dangerous area, was these balconies that were reaching over the cliffs and really not designed to deal with the cliff erosion. And that's resulted in a lot of very dangerous situations for the students out there. So I wanted to note that. There was also in F2A22, in the second line, it says minor additions of less than 10% of the existing floor area to May. I think that's a typo, the to May.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Okay, so I do have a comment again on the use of bluff retreat setbacks. We have an outline of no development except pathways, stairways, fencing, signage, and other features. Again, I would ask the question if this would, because I think we bumped into this before where we had some of these minor development, i.e., again, something to do with a golf course, a green, a tee box, and are we eliminating that or unduly restricting that here? Because that could come to call. So, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, Mr. Chair, under F2A1, talking about minimum bluff retreat setback, near the bottom, it says alterations or additions to existing nonconforming development. I'm just curious, is there any nonconforming development along bluffs in the city of Goleta?
Ooh, that's a direct question. Did you do that survey recently?
There's nonconforming.
There is, okay. Because yeah. I mean, Commissioner Maynard mentioned Isla Vista, but that's not in the city of Goleta.
That's
so
correct.
So I'm thinking bluff front properties like Shoreline Drive in Santa Barbara. We just don't have bluff front development in the city of Goleta.
Or do we?
I'm thinking of the Venico Piers 421 and then the access road. And then the Elwood Onshore Facility is a little
Coast,
right. Those are legal nonconforming structures.
Okay. All right. And then down at the bottom under 2II, we talk about minor additions of less than 10% of the existing floor area. So these are, I'm just curious if we should, what about cumulative? I mean, you could have 10%, mm-hmm. then later 10%, then later 10%. So should there be a quantifiable limitation on that?
All right, Commissioner Daniels, you're on page 80. Anything?
I am on page 80, and I am on F2 and A2 again.
Uh-huh.
Use of bluff retreat setback. If you could put in, where it says stairways, it should say engineered stairways. Just a page earlier, it talks about engineered stairways on the bluff face, and you need the engineer in there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How about page 81, Commissioner Daniels?
G1 at the end of that sentence, it talks about grading standards, but it doesn't talk about where they are. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to know what grading standards you're looking for.
Where they're located.
Located, yes.
All right, anything else?
No, sir.
Commissioner Jenkins, 81.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and C, landscaping, it reads, drought-tolerant landscaping must be installed and maintained in the required setback. And I'm just curious, what about a situation where we just want it to remain natural? And I'm curious if the language should say only drought-tolerant landscaping will be permitted in the required setback. It just seems like that may be versus saying we must install. And then under G2, storm drainage devices, a storm drainage device over a bluff face will not be permitted unless the device can be sited so that it drains away from the bluff face. Well, if it's a bluff face device, how does it not drain over the bluff face? So I'm not sure that makes sense to me. That's all.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller?
No.
Commissioner Maynard, page 81.
I think Commissioner Jenkins made a good point about the landscaping. I thought that was great. And then I have that similar concern about the patios and fences also on landscaping, that they might be able to be done if they don't impact public views or bluff stability. And I just worry about those security of people standing on those patios. And with that, would you like me to go on to 82?
Please.
Okay. So on 82, and this sort of starts here. So it's on 81, it starts G, shoreline protection, 3, and then going to the next page as we're thinking about all of that criteria. I would also like to go back to safety element 3.7 of the general plan and again point out the alternatives analysis should demonstrate that the proposed armoring is the least environmentally damaging alternative. And that's all that I have for 82.
How about 83, as long as we're there?
I have no comments on 83.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, 82 or 83?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins, 82 or 83?
Yes, Mr. Chair. 1733050A, under subdivisions, it lists seismic in there, stating land divisions, including lot line adjustments, are prohibited in areas subject to geologic, seismic, and other hazards. The reason why I would like to see seismic eliminated is because all of Santa Barbara and Goleta is in a seismic zone. It's a seismic zone, S, I believe it is, and buildings and structures are designed accordingly. And I think item C below states it better when it's saying a setback from an active fault. So I think that really addresses it better than, you know, if there's any seismic activity, well, we're in the wrong place.
Okay.
And then on 83 D, there's a hyphen after soil in the middle sentence, which I think is a typo, and then also minimize the area to of vegetation. So I think perhaps two is a typo as well. And that's all.
All right. Mr. Daniels, anything on 82 or 83?
Well, 83... Commissioner Jenkins talked about the two of, so mm-hmm. I'll just give a little bit of some kind of he was correct, and I said that to. And so we're on 82 now, and I'm at C on the bottom of the page. Setbacks from active faults. You've got a setback of 50 feet for active faults. I'm wondering where you got that from. It doesn't make sense. 50 feet, active faults.
Okay.
You know, it shouldn't be. Okay. And non-structurally development may be allowed in such areas.
Anything else there, Mr. Daniels? 82 or 83?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to skip page 84. And we're into the landscaping section. Everybody ready for some landscaping? Mr. Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Most of this, I think, falls into design guidelines. But if it, and so I'm curious what the DRB feels about that as well. But assuming we're going to plow through it under 1735010B. Heat island effect, I think we need a definition for that. I understand what it is, but is there a definition? So.
Okay, that was it on page 85.
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Daniels, anything on 85?
Negative.
No, negative. Commissioner Fuller.
I just want to say I like the purpose. Improve the appearance of the community. I like to see things that improve rather than just preserve or mm-hmm. maintain. You know, just improve our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. All right, Commissioner Maynard.
I believe there was a comment made in the in the public comment earlier about also maintaining the variety of different types of plants that are and trees, especially that are already in the urban forest. And there wasn't as much of that in B, so maybe that could be elaborated on based on those public comments.
All right, we'll take you to page 86. Commissioner Maynard, you can take a look there right away.
I do not have comments on 86.
Commissioner Fuller?
I think I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Mr. Chair, under B, State Water Conservation and Landscaping Act, we have the word shall. And I thought we were supposed to go with must. So, and then, that's all I have on 86.
Okay, Commissioner Daniels, 86.
At the end of C, the standard does not apply where a building is located on front end or street side property. Is that a corner lot, yes or no?
It could be.
It could be. Okay.
All right.
The graphic, also the building permit landscape graphic, and I agree with Commissioner Jenkins with respect to having all of this in the hands of the DRB. This is landscaping, not land use.
Their comments are attached on this section. Okay. And we did discuss with them about having some basic requirements in the code. It guides an applicant as they're moving forward in the process.
All right, Mr. Daniels, are you still on 86?
Yes, the graphic on 86. It tells you how much width the minimum planters are, but it doesn't tell you how much you have for the sidewalk, which it chose. I'm guessing 4 feet, but you know that's having done sidewalks before. Mm. So, anyway.
Okay. Anything on page 87? Moving you on.
Let's see on 1735.040A at the end of the second to last line talks about utility housing boxes, and I'm wondering if the boxes are vaults. Is that what you mean, is a vault or not? Because that's how we know it. I mean, it's a vault. I've never heard a box.
Unless it's above ground.
Hmm?
You know, could be a utility box above ground.
Maybe.
Transformer.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else there, Mr. Daniels?
Negative.
Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, Mr. Chair. 1735.040B, landscape mound. Second line says 4.1 with the toe of the mound located a distance of 12 feet or greater. If we're going to jive with the diagram, that should say with the top of the mound. So the top of the mound is 12 feet, not the toe.
If I could just I'm not sure how to best get the DRB comments to you, so I'm just jumping in where they have made reference. Clarification is recommended regarding the language in 040B, landscaping mound. Chair Schneider commented that the language seems more like a definition for a landscape mound, and the requirement is not clear.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. It's not something that I feel like I can just respond to on the fly. I mean, I would love to get that and
it's chew in your it over. Packet.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
But we just got that tonight.
No.
It wasn't
today.
From commission from.
Oh no! Yeah. It was part of the original. Yeah, Thursday.
It was. Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thursday. I must email. Have missed that. So my bad.
No worries.
Sorry. Okay.
That's why I'm here. I want to, just in case the board members are watching, I want to make sure mm-hmm. that. They know that we're giving you their comments.
Mm-hmm. So can I make a comment just on?
Let me just see if I finished up, Mr. Jenkins.
Yeah, you
page
have.
87. Yeah. I'm to you.
So to clarify, under landscape mound, maybe have where used. You know, like if you're going to use a landscape mound, these are the design, you know, criteria. Because it doesn't say where you use it or why you use it. It just says, you know, how you use it. So. maybe put in the beginning of landscape mound where used. I also wanted to take the opportunity to the DRB's thoughts of the end of E, unused areas, a natural state, an undisturbed state. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty good idea, too, I thought. Something like that, more a greater definition or indigenous vegetation, something. Okay.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard?
Under materials, where it 1735050A, where it notes turf, I was wondering if there's a way that we could restrict the percentage of property that is turf, and that may come about, as was reported in the staff report in the state water conservation, the state model water efficiency landscaping ordinance, as we start to embed some of that, but I was starting to look for ways that we could promote water efficiency here.
All right. Anything else on 87? You want to take us to 88 right away?
I do not currently have comments for 88.
All right. Commissioner Fuller, anything on 88?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing on 88, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Daniels?
Yes. I don't like the requirements of landscaping. I mean, it's so specific that you don't need a landscape architect, and that's crazy. You know, there's good ones out there that are very artistic, and you know, I think they can do a fine job without having all these restrictions. And in F, you've got the applicant may request that the trees be planted off-site at twice the required ratio. That's a penalty for having a different size lot. You know, I can't go with that. That's ridiculous. And one other thing about F, let's see, documents that such trees have been planted. Be submitted to one moment, please.
Okay.
Planning requirements described in the applicant may request that documentation.
You okay, Mr. Daniels, or should I move on?
Move on. I had said something in my notes, but I can't find out where I...
Okay, if it comes back to you, just holler out.
You bet.
We'll go back to
Thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins, are you able to go to page 89?
On 89, yes, Mr. Chair, under 1735060C, continuity and connection. Landscaping must be designed within the context of surrounding area. If the adjacent landscaping is consistent with the landscape design standards of this chapter, ideally new plant materials must blend well with planting on adjacent properties to create seamless and natural landscape. Sounds really boring to me. And I'm also curious, does this apply to residential as well, which I'm assuming it does? It just, you know, what if someone wants a cactus garden in the front yard versus the neighbor has a tropical palm? So... And then how do you enforce that? You know, if someone wants to re-landscape their front yard, does every re-landscaping triggered review by DRB, or, you know, we may have a whole house full of people again saying you're taking my property rights away. So, anyhow, I just feel like to say it should be in context of the surrounding area and identical or ideally planting seems inappropriate to me. That's all on 89.
Mr. Daniels.
Chair, yes, I have a better understanding of what I wanted to say.
Sure.
In F on 88, page 88, it doesn't say whether it's where I said you have this penalty. I thought that was. It talks about the land and maintenance of the land and you know what was this was this private or public lands yet that you're talking about? I mean, it'd be nice to know.
Okay.
Right.
There were a number of comments from the board on this section, if you'd like me to go through them. Member Carroll commented that requiring ground cover plants to be at least the 4-inch pot size is limiting, noting that he has had some success with plugs, which are similar, or which are smaller, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Remove the language, must be at least the 4-inch pot size, or remove the whole sentence. In the shrub section, Member Carroll recommended removing the first sentence requiring a specific mix of sizes. Member Hyman commented that requiring a specific mix of plant sizes may be prohibitive to design. Change the language in the shrub section in the last sentence from 75% to no less than 100%. Member Carroll commented that this seems more like a design decision. Recommendation was made by Member Carroll and Chair Schneider to remove the first sentence in C, trees, that requires a minimum of 15% of the trees be 24-inch box or greater in size. Mm. Member Carroll believes that 15 gallons should be the minimum for trees with few exceptions. Member Carroll recommended removing the last sentence in C, trees. That member also commented that a minimum of 4 feet of continuous open planting area between trees seems too close. Member Hyman commented that it depends on the site condition and the species.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, so that took us through the top of page 89. You had 89, right?
Yes,
Commissioner
I did.
Jenkins.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuller, did you have anything on 89?
If I could go back to 88 just for a second.
Sure.
Under 1G, trees, large number of genetically identical clones. It seems to me that sometimes things can look nice when you have uniformity in plantings. You could have a large number of similar trees, and like a forest has large number of similar trees. So limiting that, I take exception with their that choice. And then back over on 89, where it says continuity and connection under instead of saying must, you could say should, you know, like take into account and planting in context where, you know, you may have like your desert landscape, you know, transition into the tropical forest next door or something.
Okay, should. Commissioner Maynard, do you have anything on these two pages, 88 or 89?
I would just say the species diversity, I'll respectively disagree a little bit just because I think the language is forgiving enough here. There's no musts or requireds. It's just this should be considered and lean towards. And I do think it is a good thing to try to push for, but the soft language here is appropriate. On the continuity and connection, I think a wonderful point was made on that. And I think that would does actually make it very difficult to do the drought-tolerant landscaping because that is such a new landscape. If I have to match the turf on either side of me, it's going to be hard to go in a new direction. So I also have concerns about 173560C, and that's all I have for 89.
All right. So we're going to go over to page 90. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you take us through 90 if you've got anything?
Just that we heard in public comment that 1735080, the alternative compliance section, was something that was really important for some of our business partners. And so I just want to reiterate that that is well written and an important section.
All right. And anything on 91, as long as we've got you open to that page?
I do not have comments on 91.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, 90 and 91.
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Nothing.
Commissioner Daniels.
On 89, 1735060, landscape design principles, that's DRB. I mean, it's clearly DRB. So.
Okay. Anything else on 90 or 91?
No.
All right.
If I could just add the DRB comments. Member Carroll recommended removing or equivalent in A, noting it would keep the standard consistent. Member Carroll commented that the industry standard refers to existing trees over 4 inches rather than the 6 inches that is shown in C, existing trees. He noted that the language as measured 48 inches is appropriate and standard. Member Carroll recommended adding item F, requiring an irrigation plan that complies with the state model water efficient landscaping ordinance. Member Sheeler suggested adding an item to the landscape plan section that requires minimum maintenance for landscaping that prevents plants, grasses, and shrubs from intruding into walkways, bike paths, and roadways. For alternative compliance, there was some confusion amongst the board. They requested some clarification with regard to the alternative compliance and whether it's useful and needed. They thought some of the language was vague, and they requested a separate document be generated with landscape design guidelines in the future. I am still of the opinion, as you are, that the alternative compliance section does help, especially as instead of requesting a variance from the landscape guide or requirements, you can go with alternative compliance instead. It's just a different way of doing it.
All right. So we are in the lighting section. And depending how this goes, we may be running out of time. So lighting. Commissioner Jenkins, I think you should start us off.
That's a bright idea. 1736-020A2, holiday lights. Flashing holiday lights are prohibited on commercial properties. I'm just curious what the nexus is for that.
Okay. You mean anything else on that page?
Nope. Nothing on 93 either.
Nothing on 93 either? I'm writing that down. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Daniels, anything on 92 or 93?
Lighting looks like DVR.
DRB?
DRB, I'm sorry. 93, you've got designs from the prohibitions. You've got architectural lighting. It's just not what we do. Landscaping, we don't do that. Lighting, we don't do that. Exterior lighting, I should say.
Okay. I think, Mr. Chair, just if I can participate in that discussion, I agree. I think perhaps the section on lighting could be distilled down to genuine planning issues. You know, I mean, spillover and night sky, or it was great comment by Cecilia Brown tonight, just citing that it's really, everything's trumped by Title 24. Mm. So anyhow, I just, given all of that, does this section number one have to be as big as it is? And, is it all trumped by Title 24 anyhow? So.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, we're on pages 92 and 93.
Yeah. 92 and 93. Well, there was some comment that I read that thought that all lighting should be shielded from, you know, public right of way. I disagree with that in that it provides safety and security. That street lighting might not provide, and not that we should try to light up all the public right of ways, but I just don't think that it should be like prohibited.
Okay. Anything else on those two pages?
No.
Commissioner Maynard, we're 92 and 93.
I'll make a general comment on the lighting section that I do think it should refer to Title 24. I would like guidance from staff about the International Dark Sky Association's bug regulations and if those might be able to be used here. I'm not as experienced or knowledgeable about the bug regulations, but I'd like some guidance from staff on whether those had been considered as a potential option. Under purpose 1736.010, I think we should add and protect local wildlife from negative impacts of lighting. This was in some parts of the general plan. I will also make a general comment that I agree that a lot of this is design, and so I support my fellow commissioners in making that concern here. And I think flashing holiday lights on commercial properties should be allowed. On page 93, under prohibitions, there was some public comment, and I noted that it was also in the design review board comments that laser lights should also be added as prohibitions. And given the concerns for that, I'm willing to add that as well.
All right, we're on page 94 and 95. Commissioner Maynard, do you want to start us off there? You never get to start. Yeah.
So we have some language about restricting against mercury. We've also got, I guess that my general comments I'm going to say is, again, going back to Title 24, but I'd like to see more language around encouraging or requiring LEDs on commercial properties, but that may just be trumped by the Title 24 regulations. Under 1736.040b, timing controls, Design Review Board made an interesting comment about adding some language on smart lighting controls, and I thought that that was a good idea. That's all my comments.
All right. Was that 94 and 95 or just 94?
That is correct, 94 and 95.
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, 94 and 95?
Yeah, just a little inconsistency in 1736.040c1. Exceptions. One and two, last sentence both has an opaque top, keeping them from shining directly up. And then on four, and I understand the low voltage, you know, you're not so worried about shining up, but on four, it doesn't talk about having an opaque top. So just consistency if you're going to.
Okay. Then 94 and 95?
That's it.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Under 94, which is a continuation of the prohibitions listed on 93, under F, other light types, it says, and changing color lights. I hope you're going to still allow traffic lights. maybe there needs to be some clarification there. And then under 1736.040A, seems like a redundancy by stating fixtures must be appropriate to the style and scale of architecture must be used. I would perhaps strike must be used and just add a period after architecture. And then C, shielding. All lighting must be designed to confine direct rays to the premises or onto adjacent public right-of-ways. Is that really our intent? I'm curious if we're really wanting it to say away from adjacent premises or from adjacent public right-of-ways. Is that really our intent there?
Okay.
That's all I have on 94 and 95.
And Commissioner Daniels, anything 94 or 95?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right. Turn the page to 96, Commissioner Daniels. See if you got anything there, 96, 97.
Negative. 97, no.
Chair Onan, could I go back to 94 for just one second?
Sure. So are you done here? 96, 97?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I just noticed something that on page 94F, at the top of the page, it talks about changing intensity of illumination. I'm wondering if this is actually restricting us on some of the newest energy efficient technologies. I know on campus out at UCSB, we've started to use lights that do motion sensors, and then as you're approaching the lights get brighter, and they'll fade out as you go away. It's actually helped us a lot with both increasing safety and energy efficiency. So that might be a little bit too far. I think having some opportunity for lights to intensify as people get closer to them can help with safety and smart lighting control. So I just wanted to note that. I apologize, I didn't catch that the first time.
Okay. So, Commissioner Jenkins, 96, 97?
Nothing, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Fuller?
If I may go back to 94 and 95.
Yes.
Thank you. 1736.040C. It's onto the premises or onto adjacent public rights of way, you know, and or onto adjacent public rights of way, I think would be fine. But, and then on two, on the next page, it says, and only if the light does not cause glare or light to shine on adjacent private property or public rights of way. So there, it looks like a conflict there.
Okay. All right. How about 96, 97?
I think I'm good. Oh, no, actually, I was just wondering, there was a comment I read about, you know, gas stations and convenience stores not having, you know, extra illumination. Actually, I think that having them have extra illumination is a good idea because, you know, not only are you filling a vehicle with a flammable fluid, but these are also frequently targets of, you know, robbers, people with bad intentions, and extra illumination can provide additional safety as well as security.
Okay.
So I'm all in favor of, you know, bright gas stations and convenience stores, parking lots. And...
All right.
So on page 96, under G, walkways, bikeways, and parks, I thought there might be able to be some consideration for requiring safety lighting for public bikes, bikeways, and walkways. And that's all of my comments.
Okay. We are now on 17.37. Woo-hoo. Do we have the stamina to go through one more section?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you give us page 98 and 99?
On 98, there was some comments from the public about making sure that we noticed business owners about nonconforming uses as soon as the zoning code is approved. And I thought that was a great comment. I'm not quite sure where in the section to comment on that, so I will just reiterate that I think that's a good idea.
All right. Anything on the next page? No?
No, I don't have any comments on the next page.
Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Chair, on 99, under 1737.030D, expansion of nonconforming uses, and then it says no lawful nonconforming use. I'm just thinking from the standpoint of consistency, it should perhaps say no legal nonconforming use.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's all I have.
Commissioner Daniels, anything on 98 and 99?
17.37.03, big D, number one at the end, may expand floor area that it occupies. How much should it, does it have the ability to expand?
Okay. All right, anything
else? Were you going to say something?
Yeah, Tara, and I was going to clarify that these regulations are what is currently adopted and is what we use, and that's intentional for now, so that's why it reads the way it does.
And there is no specific square footage. If you need a CUP, you can state your case in front of the commission or the council.
Since it's in an existing structure, then it's not creating any additional, yeah.
Correct.
All right. Anything else there, Mr. Daniels?
Well, number three, again, it just says the requirements of the building code may expand the floor area it occupies. So I was just wondering what the building code says and where in the building code is this. So anyway.
All right. Sure. Yes.
If I may, just for consistency, also under D, 1, 2, and 3, why not say illegal nonconforming use and, you know, again, any legal nonconforming use and, again, illegal nonconforming use, just so people are, you know, because that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about nonconforming uses which are illegal because they're nonconforming and weren't legal in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that, did everybody get a shot? 98, 99?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think Commissioner Fuller brings up a good point, too. I mean, under purpose, same thing. I mean, you could add legal to wherever you say nonconforming if that's staff's intent. So.
All right. So we're going to go to page 100. Mr. Daniels, do you have anything on 100?
little c under 5 at the last sentence there, it ends with plan and then it has something else. Does it? I inked it all out. Do you see something after plans?
No.
Okay. All right. Never mind. I took away the arrow. Okay. F, the nonconforming use does not include the storage processing, or generation of hazardous materials, products, or waste.
Okay.
It sounded right to me. Okay. Never mind.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
5H, the non-conforming uses perhaps should be use, singular. That's all I have.
Okay. Page 100, Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. Commissioner Maynard, 100. Page 100.
There was a comment in the public comment on page 100 that 5C, it may be hard to do that for a non-conforming use, that part of why they're non-conforming might be that they were inconsistent with the general plan and were in place before the general plan. So I think that might that inconsistency is something I wanted to pay attention to. And then can I go to 101?
Please.
So 1737042. I'd like more guidance about when the following information would be waived. I would recommend that it only be waived in a case where it's clearly not applicable. Since this information would be going to the Planning Commission, I found A through J to all be quite valuable information and would like more guidance on when those could be waived.
All right. So that was page 101. Commissioner Fuller, do you have anything on 101?
I'm good.
Commissioner Jenkins?
101. Nothing on 101, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Daniels, we're on 101.
Big A, 2, small c, the maps. A map showing contiguous properties, including assessor parcel number and property owners. Well, when we did maps, the first thing you did was put a north arrow on it. So I'm asking for a north arrow. If you're going to ask for a successor parcel number, right. You better ask for a north arrow.
That's right.
Good. Okay. So, Commissioner Daniels, anything on 102?
Not in the findings, no.
All right. How about 103, as long as you're there?
Again, not in the findings.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins, 102 and 103.
102, Mr. Chair. Item F, it lists estimated expenditures for improvements, including materials, labor, and equipment. I'm just curious as to, again, what the nexus is. Why are we asking that? How does that help in the decision making, I guess?
Okay. Commissioner Fuller, 102, 103.
Maybe I can make a comment on that, but in a non-conforming use, it's the sometimes they think of amortizing somebody's investment.
Good point.
That's
okay.
All. Right. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm good.
Okay, 102, 103. Commissioner Maynard, 102, 103.
Under D3, I'm wondering if we should also say something about subsequent parking needs, if the overall intensity would result in additional subsequent parking needs. That was something I had seen in the public letters that had come in. And then for 103, I wanted a little bit more guidance. Again, one of the public comments had asked this question. I thought it was a very good question. What would trigger the termination situation? And just having a little bit more guidance and clarity on that would be helpful.
All right, so let's look at 104 and 105. Commissioner Maynard, why don't you see if you have any notes on those two pages?
Under 105, 105C1 up to an additional 15 years seems like a very long time to me, so I'd like some consideration of that. Also on E1, where they're talking about some of the amortization analysis, I know we're working on an amortization study on the EOF site, and I guess I'm curious about what the deadlines are. And some of these other areas, they've established sort of clear benchmarks and timeframes. I don't see good timeframes on the amortization study, so I'd like to see that considered.
All right. Commissioner Fuller, 104, 105.
Yeah, I just want to point out that I'm on record as testifying before the City Council that I'm opposed to this whole section at the time they adopted it. I just think it's wrong. You know, I like the way the county had it, and most municipalities do. And to for the city council to just decide that your property is now one they don't like, and it's non-conforming, and they can tell you that you're going to stop using it and maybe remove it. A little heavy-handed, but that's my opinion.
All right. 104, 105, Commissioner Jenkins.
Well, I agree with Commissioner Fuller to a limited degree. The old county one was so cumbersome. I mean, you had to have a court reporter, et cetera. I mean, it was really a pain. So I'm not sure I'm totally happy with this one either, but I hear you. In light of that, Commissioner Maynard, I'm okay with the 15 years. I just think that some grace, some accommodation, and we're giving them a time frame. So I think if we're going to beat them up and shut down their business, I think to give them an additional 15 years is like, come on. You know, but that's all I have.
Commissioner Daniels, anything on 104, 105?
No, Chair. Thank you.
How about 106 and 107?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Nothing on 106 and 107.
Commissioner Fuller, 106, 107?
No.
Commissioner Maynard?
On 107, 1737, 060, C, enlargements or alterations, I'm probably just missing it, but how much larger can an enlargement be? I think in an earlier section, a nonconforming use could only grow up to 50% more beyond the space, but I don't see something like that here. So I'd like to have some limits on how much it can be enlarged. And also maybe thinking of cumulatively, like can it be enlarged 10%, then another 10%, another 10%, and thinking about not letting nonconforming uses continue to grow over long periods of time.
Okay. That takes us through 107. Let's look at 108.
Okay. So under F, restoration of a damaged structure, I've got a question here. Should we add provisions for historic landmarks? So maybe historic landmarks could not exceed 100% of replacement cost, or maybe be able to fully be able to replace. I'm just not sure if this section is appropriate for historic spaces.
We will be pursuing a separate historic ordinance. We're preparing the RFPs now.
Can I just respond to that? Sure. It'd be great if there was a reference to that here, just so that it is known that it was an exception that would then be clarified in the historic section.
Well, we would come back and edit that once there is a historic ordinance.
I understand. Thank you very much for that clarification.
Commissioner Fuller?
I'm good with this.
Commissioner Jenkins, we are on page 108.
Nothing.
Commissioner Daniels, page 108.
Yes, excuse me. What Mr. Fuller was saying about, or Commissioner Fuller was saying about legal nonconforming and nonconforming. It starts out, F1 starts out with a legal nonconforming building or structure, etc., and it ends with a non-conforming structure. So I'm guessing they're both legal. Non-conforming building is legal, but it would be nice to have some consistency.
It's kind of a global comment,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. It is a global comment, and thank you, Commissioner Fuller.
Okay, you know what? I am going to stop. The next section, oil and gas, is obviously significant. Did we have somebody waiting just for oil and gas? Okay, because this is a rather significant section, we're at the end of the evening, so I am going to say that we're going to take these next two sections up later. You know, unfortunately, without doing these next two sections, we didn't get to the halfway point. If we had completed our mission today, we would have been at the halfway point with really three significant meetings. I know this is our fourth workshop, but our first one was a lot of information, and so we're doing really well. Another four or five meetings, and we can get through this first round. So with that, I'm going to go to the director and see if you have any comments for us.
Just a couple. So on February 29th, next Monday, we will have a meeting where we do not talk about the zoning ordinance.
So it's a regularly scheduled meeting.
Well, it's a special meeting, but there are normal items on it for you to consider. And I could talk about them, but I won't. It'll be a surprise when you get your packet. So the next special meeting we had talked about was March 7th. I'm not going to cancel that yet. Just in the event that February 29th needs to be continued for some reason. And then we'll know whether or not we can cancel March 7th on February 29th. The next zoning meeting will be on March 14th. And as Ms. Wells announced earlier, we do have a all-day workshop scheduled for Saturday. So if any of you would like to stop by, you're welcome. But we'll have all the stations. We'll have lots of opportunities to chat with staff and our team. And I just welcome anybody who's interested in learning more about the code and has specific questions on different issues. We're happy to sit down and chat.
Could I ask, for February 29th, you said you'll surprise us, but could you just give us a hint at what that will be?
We have one cellular facility, a telecommunications facility, the general plan annual report. It's late. Ms. Wells, can you?
And we also have a public hearing on the Venico PRC 421 access road. It's a maintenance permit and a mitigated negative declaration.
So it's only three items, but I think the general plan annual report usually goes fairly quick. The telecommunications facility will be the first one that you hear under the shot clock, the new shot clock that is set by the state. And so we'll tell you more about that and how that works during that presentation.
I know it always takes me a long time to get through the general plan reports. We did that last year. If we can get it out as soon as we can this week, I'd really appreciate it. It'll take me some time to review.
Okay. Commissioner comments. Does anyone have a comment? Commissioner Maynard?
Just that I am tremendously impressed by staff and all of the work that you've done on the zoning ordinance. So thank you, and thank you for our consultants as well.
Commissioner Fuller.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the participation of the citizens in this process and appreciate all their comments, and especially appreciate when they can provide written input so that we have, you know, something to look at and something to reflect on rather than just trying to take notes furiously.
Commissioner Daniel?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
Mr. Chair, so at our next zoning meeting, I assume we're going to take on these last two items that we didn't do tonight plus more, would be my guess.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah.
So. You're not going to get off that easy. nice try, though. No, we will take a look at the number of pages and try and stay within that range of 50 to 70. We like to book a little bit extra just in case you're moving faster, but otherwise, knowing that whatever's not done will continue to the next meeting.
Great. Anything else, Commissioner Jenkins? I have no comments. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I motion to adjourn.
Well, it sounds second. Like I got a first and a second. Meeting adjourned.